show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The sun was going to come up today, and it did. It really, really did. The sun dawned on a decidedly worse for the wear America, but the sun did, in fact, dawn. And that's about as much as you can say. The house was nasty. The house race was nasty. The house is in the complete control of the Republican Party, and that ain't good. A lot of Republican governors, and of course, you know, we retain control of the Senate, which means that Harry Reid retained control of the Senate, which doesn't speak very much. I was, of course, scanning the coverage today. And I noticed, let's see, President Obama said the people have spoken. John Boehner, I'm told that Agent Orange comes from the Randy Rhoads show, so congratulations. She's quick. She's witty. Pumpkinhead said, we're ready to turn this thing around. We're ready to turn this ship around or something. Yeah, something Pumpkinhead. And then, what did Harry Reid say? Yeah. God, you know, you couldn't make this stuff up. Harry Reid said, we're ready to compromise. Don't! Yeah, Harry's ready to compromise. When has Harry not been ready to compromise? You know, had there been a little less compromising and a little more legislating, they might not be in this spot. But Harry Reid is ready to compromise. Jesus. 52-47. Last I checked, anybody know about the Washington race? They said Patty Murray's race was too close to call. Harry's ready to compromise. You know, little words like that just scare the bee jabbers out of me. Because, as Sandra has repeatedly reminded us, the Cat Food Commission report comes in on what, December the 1st? Yeah, 27 days from now. Yeah, Harry Reid was more than a little disturbing. How's he going to compromise? I don't know. You know, memo to Harry Reid, based upon his remarks today, there ain't no far left in America. In the United States of America, there is nothing that comprises the far left. There's nobody who gets up every morning and whistles the Internationale while they shower. There just aren't. But you watch. This will be some grand excuse for the Democratic Party to go lurching to the right. You rang. But the sun came up today. It's kind of cold and gray and miserable here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, where John Racy took a stomping and Jesse Johnson took a bigger one. Joe Manchin is going to Washington to replace Blanche Lincoln. That's the kind of Democrat that he is. He's one of those 52 in that 52 to 47 split. Yeah, I know. But let's consider something else for a moment, if we may. Let's consider something else. It's something that I've been saying for the past few days. Did the Republicans actually lose? There are places in history where nations, generals, whatever, have risked everything on one battle, one throw of the dice. Gettysburg comes to mind. Everybody told Robert Lee that this was not the place for him to fight his decisive battle, that the North already held the high ground. And Robert Lee said, is reported to have said, we are going to decide this thing here, now, once and for all. There are other instances. If you consider the desperate gambit of the Wehrmacht in December of 1944, in what became known as the Battle of the Bulge, one last desperate throw. And though they inflicted considerable damage in both instances, they both lost, both the Wehrmacht and the South. Because while it looked like hell yawning open, they didn't have the impetus to get it done. I'm probably the only person saying this, but I believe the Republican Party lost last night. Why? Well, I'll tell you. Because no matter how many times President Obama says it was about the economy, no matter how many times the various and sundry for-profit media say that it was about the economy, no matter how many papers, no matter how many bloggers, no matter how many teabaggers say it was about the economy or the Constitution, it wasn't. We are 2 years into, almost 2 years into the Obama presidency. They are 2 years that have been lived in absolute misery by the right-wingers, the bigots, the fascists, the racists. More than anything else, this was a referendum, this was a desperate one-throw-of-the-dice gamble to try to remove the President of the United States from office before his term was out. That's how Republicans roll. They had to have the House, and they had to have the Senate. If they had had both, I guarantee you, before the end of 2011, they would have removed Barack Obama from office. But Bob, what could they charge him with? Who cares? They'd make it up. They're Republicans. This wasn't about the economy. This wasn't about their beloved Constitution. This was about getting that brown guy out of their White House. And they failed. At the very least, the Democrats will have 52 votes, or 52 members in the Senate, and possibly 53. counting, of course, Bernie Sanders. Now, Joe Manchin, as I said, you know, there was a lot of the just wash elections in the Senate last night. Lest we forget, Jim Bunning in Kentucky was crazier than a sprayed roach. He has been replaced by a man who is crazier than a sprayed roach. That's a wash. That is not a net gain. Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky wrote me an email last night and said, I am so ashamed of Kentucky. But don't be. Kentucky is Kentucky. Don't be, you know, don't be surprised that Alabama is down to one Democratic member of the House of Representatives. Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised the fact that we now have two members, two Republicans in the House of Representatives in West Virginia. In all three cases, people are that stupid. I'm sure that if John Stewart heard me say that, he would think, well, so you're not being nice. But I adhere to my thesis that I have maintained for quite some time now, that this was not an election, this was an IQ test. I mean, dig it. Nick Joe Rahal hails from Beckley, West Virginia. Nick Joe Rahal is from Beckley, West Virginia, and has pumped countless thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars into his district by virtue of his 34 years in the House of Representatives. I have issues with Nick Joe Rahal, but that's not one of them. Well, guess what? Raleigh County, wherein lies Beckley, Raleigh County voted against their own congressman. He lost two counties in his district and won in 17. But the people in his home county were so godforsaken dumb that they voted for a corrupt ex-state Supreme Court judge who was a wholly owned creature of Don Blankenship. That's how dumb voters can be. And no, I'm not going to ameliorate my remarks. There are, when things are done unintelligently, they are unintelligent, and we call that doing dumb things. But with places like that, and with places like Kentucky and Alabama, and yes, South Carolina and others, you know, there's only one thing you can really say.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yeah, it's Chinatown. These districts tend to perform true to type. Texas is Texas. Alabama is Alabama. Georgia is Georgia. Johnny Isaacson gave up a seat in the Senate to become governor of Georgia? What? Yeah, well, you know, whatever. Nikki Haley won the governor's office in South Carolina. Surprise. There's a lot of hand-wringing that could be done and a whole lot of analysis that can be done. I think the single... again, I will not buy into the myth that this is about the economy, although the economy certainly has elements, it certainly had influence on it, but that's not all it was. I read a diary over at Booman Tribune yesterday by a guy who was exit polled when he voted. He said they didn't ask him any questions about the wars. They didn't ask him any questions about climate change. They didn't ask him any questions about clean energy or renewables or energy independence. The only thing they wanted to ask him about was how he felt about the economy. And he drew from the person, and I can't remember, I think his name was Stephen. He said the conclusion he drew was that the economy was the pre-manufactured format for how the for-profit media, at my term, insisted upon talking about this election. And yet, oddly enough, 94% of the signers of the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310, that Nick Rahal has so studiously kept from being voted upon, 94%, not our voter, it was 94% of the Progressive Caucus came back. Alan Grayson took an ass beating, but that is because the Republican Party, the Democratic, or the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, Citizens United money over the top, went after him because he had been one who had stood up and more plainly than anybody else had said that the Republican Party are a bunch of dogs. And they aimed to punish Alan Grayson, and they did. But I tell you, and this isn't a matter of old Bob just sitting around trying to come up with some way to make happy talk out of a bad thing. Last night was bad. We're grown-ups here. We can say that. But the fact of the matter is, they didn't win. And we need to understand, first and foremost, that they didn't win because they are not going to be able to remove the President of the United States from office, because that is what they would have sought to do. There are reasons for this. They know that, if they had had President Biden, they'd have been okay with that. Because they can beat him in 12. Right now, there is not a single human being in the Republican Party who can beat Barack Obama in 2012. Willard Romney? Sarah Palin? Come on, Newt Gingrich even? No. There's one guy out there and one guy only, and his name is Jeb Bush, and he would much rather run against Joe Biden than Barack Obama. They did not win because they could not remove. They do not have the power at this point to remove the President of the United States from office, which I swear to God, as sure as God made little green apples and they give you a bellyache when you eat too many of them, is what they wanted to do. Because this isn't about the economy. This isn't about anything except that the Republican Party represents a stratum of this society that still hates brown people. It really is that simple. And the only thing that scares me out of all of this is what I read from Harry Reid this morning. Well, you're certainly ready to compromise. Really? If the House impeaches Barack Obama, will you compromise by letting them remove him from office, Harry? Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I hope there's a power struggle for leadership in the Senate. Dick Durbin, the Chuck Schumer even, I know. But you know what? This is one of those moments from The Godfather. This is the part where Tom gets replaced because they need a wartime consigliere when you go to the mattresses. Because that much is true. We will have to go to the mattresses. But we also need to, and you know, you got to wonder if the for-profit media will now become quiet and complacent, as they usually do when confronted by Republicans in power. Is anybody going to ask? Every day. Is there going to be somebody there to ask Eric, I Like Britney Spears Cantor and Pumpkinhead Boner when they're going to start issuing their proposals for all the programs they intend to cut so that they can balance the budget? Is anybody going to be there to ask Rand Paul that, libertarian ophthalmologist that he is? every day. You know, we said we'd hold the Democrats' feet to the fire. The only problem is the Democrats didn't want their feet held to the fire. Well, let's find out. Maybe it's the Republicans who need their feet held to the fire. You know, they've said that they are going to tear this. What did Caribou Barbie say? They said they're going to tear this government limb by limb. Well, you know what? I think we ought to encourage them to do their damnedest. You know, stand to, McDuff. Lead on, McDuff, and cursed be he who first cries enough. But the thing is, they don't want to. That's all just BS that they pump out there for their little oatmeal dribbling faithful. The Republican Party only wanted what the Republican Party always wants. All in the world they want, back to the Godfather metaphors, is to dip their beaks. Or to go to the hillbilly metaphor, all they want to do is get their front feet and their back feet in the trough. They're no good at wielding power, we know that. But they are very good at thievery. And they hope that, and you see, that's the thing. The teabag in financing is going to dry up. All that Americans for Prosperity and all the crossroads garbage and so forth, it's going to dry up for a little bit. Because you know what? The last thing the Republican Party wants is a whole bunch of pissed off, ignorant white people screaming at them about repealing the 14th Amendment and blah, blah, blah. They don't want to do any of that. They just want to steal the silverware and carry out the TV. That's why the Republican Party exists. Will it be gridlock? Maybe. But then again, you got to remember that Harry Reid wants to compromise. Because that's what Harry does best. What do you think? Let's find out. It's about 22 minutes past the hour, and we go forthwith to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I think that analysis is a pretty good one because, yeah, I mean, I was just looking at my local news, and me and my housemate were just sitting there going, what's going on? Because they kept talking about, E-Meg this, and, you know, there was such a Republican sort of slant, the whole sort of discussion, like they really couldn't believe that Jerry Brown or that the Republicans were losing in the state of California. So, I mean, the whole thing seems to be predicated on getting, you know, a beat down. They wanted them to get the Senate so badly, is basically what I'm trying to say with these media people, but it didn't happen. And we were told that it was going to be a tsunami. Everything was going. Isn't that right?
Yeah. This was going to be the perfect. You probably heard the phrase. This was the perfect storm.
Right. And you make a good point because of course they cannot carry out the remove the Negro without the control of the Senate. But you see, I think where you might. Did you mention this? These weak ass Democrats though. Instead of embracing the newfound progressive majority that they have, courtesy of the beatdown that the Blue Dogs got, which no one is talking about, I'm like, hello, them bitches got dismissed. They're going to try to move to the right. I was listening to Obama with his kumbaya still.
Yeah.
And they came back at him saying, no, there's no compromise, nigga, basically. He's still singing that song, Bob. This is my issue. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
I watched it, too, and I just...
I watched it. You know, I actually did. I said, let me see what this fool gonna say. I know he had to say, oh, I was beaten and I hear the voters, blah, blah, blah. We know that. But he went on to the kumbaya, and I'm thinking, oh, dear God, it didn't take but a minute for the various freaks to pop their heads up saying, no, no, no.
But see, and see, that's the thing. I can't believe that this is about the economy, Sandra, because the teabaggers don't understand the economy, so how can it be about it?
And they don't care anyway. They could give a F.
Yeah, they got theirs.
They already got theirs, and anyway, there's some funny news coming out where you're getting some better economic indicators now, which is, you know, beyond hilarious if the shit begins to turn around now.
Well, what did Wall Street do today? What did the Dow do?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen the final end. It was down when I looked because we got, you know, helicopter Bernanke raining on us again. And it's just, I mean, that whole thing is, you don't know how disturbing that is because the quantitative easing, it does nothing for Main Street. All it's doing is providing, creating jobs in other countries, Bob.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing nothing but shifting that money over to high interest bearing countries where they can. And there's not direct investment going on in America right now at the same pace. I don't know if you realize that, like the first time ever. So all the money is leaving the country. And they just okayed $500 billion. It's really frightening. I mean that is so frightening what the Fed is doing. I don't even know, you know, how disturbing it is. But anyway, back to your analysis. I agree with you. But we have to worry, though, because the weak, you know, read. Compromising? Yes, we're ready to compromise? Hello?
Well, I mean, of all the things you could possibly say, why that?
No, I was just sort of, I'm thinking, oh, you've got to be kidding me with that one. I mean, listen, they were like, you know, saying that, oh, Reed winning is, you know, bad news for Schumer. But I'm like, well, no, can't they have a little scuffle?
Yeah, then let's have a little dust up.
I mean, you know, why in the world should a weak-ass Harry Reid be able to stroll back into a power position now? I mean, are the Democrats this stupid where they wouldn't use this opportunity to shake shit up?
Well, did you see Harry's other comment about his election itself?
Well, what did he say? God, he gives me the creeps.
He said, I've been in some tough elections. I've been in some close elections. This wasn't one of them. And I read that and I went, were you watching the same election? Because there, Harry, the
But that's
part of, you know, no, this wasn't a close election. I wasn't nearly thrown out on my ass. I can still be stuck. But you know what? And I want to get this across. There's a reason why the Democrats in the Senate like Harry Reid, Sandra. And that's because he doesn't try to pull together. He doesn't try to have unit cohesion. He lets, he lets the butterflies be butterflies. And so by not pulling everybody together and letting them do their own thing, well, you know, little children love parents who don't enforce rules. And Democrats tend away from authoritarianism, and Harry's not authoritarian.
Well, I mean, but we have a really big problem with this so-called Democratic Party, Bob, because they are not going to be responsive to the segment of society that at least I'm concerned about, you know, which is the people who have to work. And I'm not meaning just because they're unemployed, just in general. It's like talking about a party that's lost its way. You know, I have to look at the specter of Evan Bayh and Harold Ford and Barack Obama making noises about extending the Bush tax cuts. Are you kidding me?
I know.
I'm thinking, oh, wow. So I'm just not too sure what to come away from this. I mean, yeah, I'm like in California and trust and believe it's a nice feeling because the Democrats won up and down the ticket. I mean,
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that California's had how many years of Arnold?
Yeah, 6 years of that bastard. But the thing that's really interesting, though, is once again, the media is so suspect, because I opened my local paper, the Sacramento Bee, and one of the big headlines is, oh, the minority and less affluent contribute to Brown. Well, damn, Skippy, what they gonna vote for? Meg Whitman? I mean, the mentality is like the media.
That really is the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders.
It's incredible. It's like, yeah, maybe people are finally in this state at least realizing that, oh, wait a minute, I shouldn't really vote for a billionaire because they don't really have my interest at heart. And so I have to look at the Bee talking about, you know, how odd it is that poor people vote, basically. That's the message I took away. Damn it, the poor people are voting. Okay?
Well, you know, I mean, it's at least a reflection of reality. Republicans hate it when poor people vote.
Well, yeah.
They would prefer that poor people not have the vote. Witness the statement of Rick Goodhair Perry in his upcoming tome that, you know, that the 16th and 17th Amendments were mistakes foisted on America in a fit of populism.
Everything is in a fit of populism when more than just their kind is involved in the political process. I mean, that's the thing we got to realize. But I'm concerned that the media, which is given constitutional rights, is also totally turned against the less affluent, which, Bob, is probably about 85% of us now.
It's...
Okay, and I just saw a poll that said 53% of Americans are scared they won't be able to make their rent or mortgage next month. 53%. That don't speak to a middle class. I don't know what the hell that is.
No, that speaks to somebody taking a bludgeoning, Sandra. By the way, a couple of pieces of information. The Dow closed up 24 points today.
Mm.
So the Wall Street liked the results.
Well, I think it was penciled in. They expected more, I was reading. But anyway, yeah.
And David in Tennessee pointing out something. He says, my litmus test for Barack Obama will be when he vetoes something, like tax cuts for the 250K-plus crowd.
And this is the thing. But the thing is, I'm siding on, I'll be more surprised if he does than not, which is not a good place to be, because that should be a no-brainer. We can't afford to replace $700 billion.
Well, you know, that's got to be one of the job one kind of things that the House will try to do.
Well, they have to, because they're going to expire December 31st, all of them. And the thing is, what I see happening is you're going to hear the sort of drumbeat of, oh, my God, the taxes on the rest of us are going to go way up, which with inflation, there is a problem with how much the taxes will go up. But we're going to be forced, like a blackmail jobby, to accept the richies getting their tax cuts in order to spare us. You see what I'm saying? I can see the whole argument now.
Oh, well, you want to go a little further into the funhouse, Sandra? During the lame duck session, can you see Compromise and Harry and the House on the other side going ahead and extending the Bush tax cuts for the rich so that they can say to America, see, we're Democrats and we're tax cutters too?
No, I mean, it's just sort of never ending how very badly this can go. And another thing is, like, the shocking majority that they have in the House is bigger than what they had in 1928, Bob. It's huge.
Well, from my perspective, it's going to be an interesting 2 years. I ain't going to be hurting for something to talk about.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm just thinking, just because if you think about what kind of legislation was being passed in 1928, well, I mean, although here, though, the economy, they really, I don't know how much they can do as long as Obama can find a way to use the veto. But if he wants to be reelected, though, he's going to have to back the hell off of that compromising skit.
I wonder if he knows that.
Well, I'm wondering.
Because this whole thing, it's impossible to have watched this election cycle now that it's over, Sandra, and realize how poorly his White House communicated.
Bad.
Let's just say it. Robert Gibbs, the White House communications office, those guys desperately need to be doing something else.
No,
because they can't message. They can't message worth beans.
No, he needs to shake it out. He needs to get rid. I don't know what's going on, but I've never seen such poor messaging in my entire life with the White House. I mean, you know, the Bush administration, they ain't had no problems. That was ship sharp, and they manipulated like Goebbels. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These people here. I don't know. I just looking at Obama thinking, dude, you know, I understand you're a bit down about what happened to you yesterday, but, you know, step up your game.
Suck it up. You're still president, and they don't have the Senate, and they can't remove you.
No, and it's just sort of like...
Because, I mean, am I out there, Sandra? Would they... I mean, they really would. They would trump up some, you know, charges. You know, I don't know, the birth certificate thing. That probably would fly in the House now.
Yeah, well, who knows what they're still going to try to do. Although, like you said, I mean, they really have to have both houses to carry out something. And they don't. Who are we waiting for? The woman in Washington?
Yeah.
And so, in Colorado, did that Republican win?
No.
The other Republican won?
The other Republican won, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Bennett beat Buck.
Right. I mean, Buck was just, that was like Looney Tunes.
And I've decided that my new senator's name is Blanche Manchin.
Shut the hell up. Since
Blanche Lincoln had to go, I'm sure Joe will do an admirable job of being just like her, only with much better hair.
Well, I still am sort of stuck on the how what a beatdown the sort of blue. I mean, half their caucus is gone, Bob.
Well, is there a lesson in that?
Well, but we're not hearing it because we're hearing all these pundits starting to blame the left again. Predictably, it's like that O'Donnell person, Lawrence, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He was starting it up. I'm like, oh no, you know, give it a rest.
But I said it that would be the talking point that came out of the stomping that Alan Grayson took, not the fact that he ran ads that were perceived to be really, really hateful, not the fact that more money was poured into that race than most races in the country. No. Alan Grayson was a liberal. Alan Grayson had to go.
Well, no, they're trying to like pronounce the end of liberalism yet again for the like 40th time. But Alan Grayson's district was notoriously conservative for years before he got it. So, you know, hello, let's not go overboard. And the thing about the Grayson thing that's killing me is that creep is the one that said, oh, you know, women need to submit to their husband. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, that's why Grayson called him Taliban Dan.
Right, so that is in Congress, you know, and so it's I mean, how is the orange one going to corral all them freaks? I mean, it's going to be entertaining.
But you know what? He will, because that's the genius of Republicans that they will get in line and they will march when they are told to, by God, march.
Yeah, I know it's the whole authoritarian business with them. But yeah, I don't know. I'm concerned about the lame duck period. So,
well, there's plenty to be concerned about, Sandra. And frankly, if we have another year of the White House messaging the way it did for the last two, forget it.
Yeah, and also, I also think that, you know, I'm not going to make any predictions. I don't know enough, but what I do know, you know, there's a real good chance of some really horrific financial crisis hitting again before Obama runs, because the sheer level of money that's just leaving the country and the zero interest rates, I mean, it's just not good. The Fed, it's not their job to create fake fiscal, to replace fiscal policy, and that's what's going on. I don't know. I'm really disturbed by them. In fact, the Fed, they can go ahead and destroy their reputation. That might not be a bad thing.
That might be a net gain.
Oh, my God. Anyway, listen, I'll let you move on.
Yeah, and by the way, I got an email from our buddy Marty out there, who elected not to go to the Giants victory parade after all. but did watch the coverage and noted that Arnold got soundly booed when he showed up.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, now listen, it's, you know, it's on, because California, they also passed a simple majority to pass the goddamn budget, which is very interesting.
That okay, so wait, the two-thirds majority doesn't have to happen, that loss, right?
Yeah, but I mean, let's keep in mind, I think it only covers a certain part of the budget, but it's a start. I mean, it's not going to eliminate the Prop 13 and some of the other...
Right.
Yeah, but it surprised me because it's showing that people are starting to make connection between...
And the green Economy Initiative.
That failed big time. That was a huge loss, which I am so proud of.
And then 19, that just blows my mind. Of all,
well, 19.
How bad did it lose?
I think it was like 54 to 46. It was soundly defeated. But here's the thing about that: that wasn't really the best written bill either, though.
And you know, how much did what the Obama administration said about, you know, we don't give a damn.
And also, every public official came out against it. I mean, it was really sort of, hit hard towards the end. But I do think that, you know, it's another one of those, like, gay marriage down the pike. It'll be back.
Yeah, although the three Supreme Court justices who legalized marriage equity in Iowa got thrown out on their butts.
Well, see, that's apparently a new trend now with this sort of hidden money is going to be starting to use against judges now to punish them for decisions. I mean, the body politic is taking a real beating right now. It's, I don't know what this is turning into, but that attack on judges, that's something to keep an eye on too. That's pretty scary.
Absolutely. Sandra, wonderful conversation. Look forward to talking soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. You know, at least somebody can be happy. If you're in California, you had a pretty good night. I'm informed that, yeah, they're still waiting on results in Washington, that Patty Murray has a slim lead, but nothing that they can call. I'm going to go on to the phones, back to the phones in a second, hit the emails first. John writing in from New York, he said the Republicans shouldn't be warming up the Calliope. And he even included the pronouncer. Thank you, John. Yes, Calliope, just yet. They've proved time and again that they can't and won't govern. The people haven't spoken. An angry, ill-informed subset of a fraction has spoken. In 2 years, their utter failure to right any of the wrongs will double back on them. The fracturing of the right into Republican and teabagger wings will split them even further, and we could see the end of the GOP as we know it. The trick, of course, is making it another 2 years. Yeah, not getting killed. That's really the key to the benefits plan. Meanwhile, as David in Tennessee notes, the chumps with the tea bags stapled to their hats will yet again be skipped where the reach around is concerned, wondering, well, where's mine? Once their bagger candidates are nose to tail with old Pumpkin Haid. I mean, do you really think that Rand Paul gives a damn about all of that hoopla? No, of course not. Again, I say, this is about them getting their front feet in the trough. And yeah, I know it's prayer meeting Wednesday, but you know what? This is, no. But anyway, a couple of other emails. David in South Carolina says, this is who the idiots of South Carolina voted out of office. Check out his education. Way too smart for South Carolina. John Spratt. Married. Lives in York. He's a lawyer. He's a military veteran from 69 to 71. He has an AB from Davidson College in 1964, an MA from Oxford University, and no, that ain't Oxford, Mississippi, and an LLB from Yale in 69. He was far too intelligent for the electorate in South Carolina to tolerate. Susan has News Ninja Susan has two questions for the boner. One, where's your birth certificate? And we don't want the short form, we want the long form. And you will be flying coach when you go back to your state, right? You can't get his big old orange Haid in coat. No, it won't fit in the seats. You got to fly first class. He'll fly charter. Let's see. Couple of other things out there. Joe Ray, the Foxhole Atheist, writing in. He says, I've been studying for almost 3 years now. What everything from biology to ecology are telling me is that the human species is in some deep doo-doo. We're running out of drinking water, Bob. This will become very noticeable in 5 years or so. We can no longer supply enough food for the world population, and the amount of food the world farmlands are producing is decreasing every year because agricorps are destroying our farmland. The point is, we don't have time for these crazy people, and we don't have time for moderates like Obama and Reid. The human population has already hit the J-curve. It's what happens to a species when it reaches the carrying capacity of the biome. If we don't start ramping up technology and fixing the planet, we're going to see people in America dying of thirst. We need philosopher kings and warrior scientists, Bob. We need people that get elected knowing they will only be there for one term because they're willing to do the right things. And, you know, that reminds me that Benjamin Franklin said that a man leaving public service should be glad because he would be going back to being his own boss instead of having the people boss him around all the time. Would that it worked that way. Marty asking a question that I think is a smart one. Barbara Boxer for majority leader? Barbara Boxer would be a nice majority leader. Coming from overseas, Michael writes, just thought I'd chime in as a listener from abroad observing this election. From reading the commentary sections in Norwegian papers, it is clear that many over here are surprised and puzzled by this outcome. People seem genuinely surprised that the Tea Party movement actually seemed to have had an impact. Puzzled about what this movement actually represents. Is it accountability they seek? Then what about the lies that brought the U.S. into a war in Iraq? Is it too much government intervention they oppose? Then what about the so-called Patriot Act granting government agencies the ability to wiretap without a court order? Even self-proclaimed right-wing socialist-hating commentators seem surprised and puzzled. Is it socialism they're opposing? Seeing that there was very little in the way of socialism present in Obama's health care reform, why is this even an issue? It's sad to say it, but in a way, America has become strangers to us again. I thought I'd also respectfully disagree with you on this election being an intelligence test. I'd contest that this much rather was a memory test. The Tea Party movement seems to have been energized over many correct issues, but for all the wrong reasons. Of course, national debt is an important issue, but have a look at that curve over national debt and tell me there's not a pattern there. It's simply not viable to cite concern about debt as a reason to vote Republican unless the Tea Party political attention span translates to roughly the last 2 years only. In that regard, it would be an interesting study to see how many of the Tea Party voters were politically interested before Obama became president. Ha ha! And therein lies the rub. I would argue that this might suggest something about the level of misinformation being spun around in this group. And Michael's right, this, more than anything, this was Fox's election. This is what you can do when you devote millions and millions of dollars and countless hours of energy to building a media structure that can tell America, that can give America the story that America thinks it wants to hear. This is the triumph of the Murdoch. So Michael continues. People's political understandings are easily swayed when the political experience is short. The Tea Party movement may, in other words, consist of, to use an old French term, idiote, or in plain English, noobs. The Tea Party candidates were a rather interesting collection of politicians, indeed, from average nutcases to complete morons. To me, it looks like the more so-called professional politicians won ground in this election, while the more fame-seeking, empty-headed kind, as the Sarah Palin types like Christine O'Donnell, lost. This might suggest that the teabaggers are capable of recognizing stupid, though, of course, only if we overlook degree of stupid as a measure. Michael finishes. He says, so as I'm now hopefully only among sensible Americans again, this sucks, folks. Seems the commercial powers that be have played quite a card by financially backing this racket of a circus on the right wing. I still have problems taking a teabagger claiming the right to be taken seriously, but unfortunately, I guess this election has proven that the teabaggers are a force to be reckoned with. Damn it. I hate arguing with teabagging noobs. That's from Michael in Norway. Now, Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent, also sent me a link along. He notes that Judy Jennings and Rebecca Bell Medero lost their races for the Texas State Board of Education. The idiocracy advances. This was the one bit of news that actually came close to bringing me to tears, because Texas can and will do so much damage outside of Texas. And that is the absolute truth. Wow. I think we've got some, it's like I've said before, say anything else you can say, it is certainly going to be interesting. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Megan.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
I'm feeling pretty good about my own state, but then I'm feeling kind of depressed looking out the rest of the country.
It's going to be there's some ugly coming. There's no getting around that. The question is, what ugly will they do first? And I see trying to drive through the Bush tax permanentizing the Bush tax cuts for the rich being the biggest one.
The best I can hope for at this point, just from observing Harry Reid and Obama's attitudes today, would be to kind of hope for that they don't outright veto anything, but that they, when someone doesn't want to give something to you, but they don't want to say no because it'll draw ire. So they just kind of say maybe, or they feed you a line of bullshit,
if it's got to be that way, I can live without it better than, if you can't live without it, I can live without it. That kind of, passive-aggressive, I think, is what we're talking about.
At this point, it would almost be poetic justice. I mean, because I looked at a picture of Michelle Bachmann from last night, and all that was missing, Bob, were the fangs and the blood around her mouth.
Well, did you hear what Tweety Matthews asked her, Megan?
I was falling asleep, and my mom actually, friggin' screamed from her room, and she was like, oh, my God, and I was like, what? And she goes, she goes, turn on, such and such channel, turn it on, and I think I missed it, and I just saw her on the screen, and I was like, oh, crap, she's back in. But I didn't hear the...
Well, Tweety Matthews interviewed her, and she kept spouting this BS until he finally said, are you hypnotized? Are you hypnotized or something tonight? Because I keep asking you questions, and you keep saying the same thing. Are you hypnotized?
Yeah, there was this demonic glint in her eyes, and I'm like, are you serious? And Eric Cantor did the same thing. And he, what's the guy's name? Is his name Tweety Matthews, the sandy blonde-haired guy?
No, Chris Matthews.
Okay. Not Chris Matthews, but the other guy.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Okay. He really gave Eric Cantor a hard time because he was like, Eric Cantor's not answering any of my questions. He's just spouting this line of BS. That, he's just going on with this speech, and he's not answering anything. And MSNBC panel was like, God, why are you so hard on him? I was like, I think he gave out exactly what Eric Cantor deserved. I mean, I was sitting there wishing that, hoping that someone would punch Eric Cantor in the groin. Because he was just standing there smiling, and it was just this same old BS speech that they've been spouting. And I'm sitting here like, great, it's going to be a fun 2 years just from their attitudes.
And see, the thing is, Harry Reid, really, that's the that you know, we're ready to compromise. That thing, that's what that scares me more than anything else.
I don't honestly. I took it as him and him saying that, you know, oh, this wasn't a close election. I kind of took that as a defensive posture. I don't think they're really ready to compromise now on anything.
I think he's gonna. I think he's gonna turn to absolute jello. I think he will wet his pants. Megan, I do. I think he will wet his pants if John Boehner looks cross-eyed at him.
I don't know. The way my gut feeling was that they were going to just it was just going to be snowballing and keep it jacked up to the point where they were just going to confuse him so bad that the Republicans were going to just tie themselves in their own knots. And I'm praying that's the case. I may be wrong. You could be right. But I did not read. There was an undercurrent of, I would say anger, but it was a little bit deadlier than that this morning. You know, did you hear the Obama speech? When he was making the crack about, you know, the ditch analogy, and the Republicans were sitting on the sidelines slurping their Slurpees.
Yeah.
And then Obama made the crack. The reporter mentioned, you know, the Slurpee and analogy, and Obama's like, oh, I think it's a very good drink. I think I might have them all over for Slurpees. And I was like, ouch. That was a dig. You know,
It was like everybody in the room was from Fox during that press conference. The questions were all Fox questions.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a line of BS that they're spouting now about having to compromise, and I'm sitting here thinking, well, compromise is what got us to this point, but this whole thing with the House and the Senate, I think, is a very mixed bag. I don't think anyone came away with a real win. You know, I don't know what this tidal wave, GOP, and Tea Party, and mess, and all the others they're talking about. I don't know what they're talking about. It was a very mixed bag. I mean, you've got the Democrat Senate, and you've got the Republican House, and one of the bloggers today mentioned nothing was going to get done because, you know, Boehner and Cantor and others were going to try and be bullies and push through what they wanted, and that Harry Reid was just going to, you know, push back by just not allowing anything to go through him, and it was just, I'm like, oh crud. I see a lot of infighting now in the Congress.
Oh, I think it's gonna, like I keep saying, it's gonna be a merry 2 years. And hey, you know, the presidential cycle will start in just in one more year, so strap in. You know, just no, not strap in. Just don't take the straps off. It's like they do on the airplanes now. You know, just because we turn the seat belt light out doesn't mean you should take your seat belt off.
Yeah, keep the seat belt on, I guess.
Exactly. Megan, you want to go back on hold, dear?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Stand by. Megan calling from Delaware. Onward we go. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Philip Rockwell in California.
Well, hey, Philip. How are you? Long time no talk to.
Okay, not too bad. Not too happy after the election. We are okay over here in California, but, you know, everything that happened is not unexpected for me. Back in 2008, when we elected Obama, I said it from the beginning that he's part of the Bush crime family. I mean, we were set up, now this is just my opinion, we were set up to elect this guy. Good candidates like Dennis Kucinich, Mike Rubel, you know, were real progressive candidates that were looking to make some kind of change, looking to put Bush and Cheney on the hot seat for what they did, were pushed to the wayside, and we were pretty much sold either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. And then good progressives decided that, well, yeah, it'll be progressive to elect a black guy, or it'll be progressive to put a woman in the White House, and yeah, it's good that we broke the color barrier, but we didn't really look at who this guy was. You know what I'm saying?
I understand, yes.
We didn't look to see if he was really a progressive person.
No, William. No. The biggest thing that liberals did and progressives did in this country, Philip, was they transposed their progressive hopes and liberal dreams onto him because that's what they had. I mean, you know, come on. He was a black guy, right? He had to be a liberal. Mm-hmm. Just had to be.
I assume that. Yeah, just had to be. But obviously he's not. I mean, how are we going to compromise with the people that caused this to begin with? And this is exactly what they wanted to happen. Because if you remember back towards the end of the Bush-Grind family term, the bailout of the banks, the economy was starting to go down at that point, and it seems like everybody seems to have forgotten that bit. And he was set up. So in this election cycle, that's all the reason you're hearing, like, in exit polls, them asking the people, you know, what their main issue is, and it's the economy, you know, because it was set up this way. So Republicans could get back into the House, and, well, they hoped they could get the Senate, too, but they didn't get that.
Well, but don't get in too much of a hurry with the Senate, because the fact of the matter is, Philip, I fear that at least a third of the so-called Democratic senators are so afraid that they'll be labeled as not being a centrist that they'll run over, they'll stomp each other trying to get their arms across the aisle and make nicey with the Republicans.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Blanche Manchin being a classic case in point. You know, he's going to go into the Senate immediately. He doesn't have to wait till January, my new senator.
Mm-hmm.
He will go into office immediately. And I expect him to start being real bipartisan real quick. In other words, he cannot be trusted.
And there's a lot of them in the Senate that way. But, you know, I just can't believe America could be this stupid. But I don't even know if it's that people are stupid. It's what they're fed. Here in San Diego, you know, there's no change over the last 2 years since we lost AM 1360 and our progressive radio station. All we have here is a steady diet of KOGO, Rush Limbaugh, right-wing talkers, and we just get propaganda. And that's why most of our Democrats in the area got reelected, most of the voting was more for Republicans here. And that's how it is around the country. I looked in Mike Malloy's site the other night, and he used to have a bunch of affiliates. He only has 4 radio stations that carry him now. And they made sure of that after the 2008 election, too, that Clear Channel and all these other companies that own all these radio stations made sure they got rid of the progressive talk, turned it into sports talk, and just left the conservative talk. And so that's the diet that somebody's fed. They're going to believe what they hear, and that's the problem. That's the biggest problem we have, and the change that I haven't seen with the Barack.
And that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Philip, and that is the conversation that, once again, I predict will not take place. Because we will look for every excuse we can find except for the fact that the right wing owns the dadgum messaging. They own the media.
And what do you call that? You call that propaganda.
Yeah.
And the Hitler crime family enjoyed using propaganda, too.
But see, let's put it this way. The right wing, the Republican Party, has privatized its own Ministry of Information.
Mm-hmm.
And it operates on basically an outlaw basis. They can do as they please. They can say whatever they want to. And no one calls them to account. You know, little bitty shows like this one, folks like Malloy and occasionally Hartman will point out some of this. But my God, that's a whisper compared to the scream that goes across this nation from one end to the other every hour of every day.
And even if you are lucky enough to have a progressive radio station in your town, the Bush crime family made sure that with the FCC that the right-wing stations get all the power, and you get low-powered AM radio stations for the progressive talk. So it doesn't even carry as much for that if you're lucky enough to have one. But that's the problem. That's the problem. People are still being fed the propaganda. That's the problem in 2008. That's how we were sold Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama.
Well, you know, will liberals have that conversation, or will the Democratic Party have that conversation, Philip, in which we look up and say, hey, wait a minute, everywhere a blue dog ran, a blue dog lost. I think Sandra pointed this out last night on the show, that given a choice between a Republican and a fake Republican, people will choose the real Republican every time. You can't out-Republican a Republican. But you know what? No. The imaginary unicorn left is being blamed for this, and that is so much BS as to make me gag, Philip.
I just want to spit pea soup when I hear them say that.
I understand. I understand completely.
But we got to get our heads out of our asses.
No, that would be a good start.
Long 2 years now, and I don't know what's going to happen. Well, I do know what's going to happen. They'll come up with some excuse to say how bad Obama was, and we'll have another Republican president. And America will shoot itself in the foot again.
You know who laughed the loudest last night? Jeb Bush. I'm convinced. I am convinced that that evil bastard is sitting there just biding his time. He's going to let the Willard Romneys and the Sarah Palins and the Newt Gingrichs tear themselves all to pieces, and then step in and say, "I'm the only one who can get it done." And look, Philip. You know, I've mentioned Jeb before, and some people have said, "Really, Bob? Do you really?" Come on. The American people can't have forgotten, can they? Look, the American people just forgot, Philip. They just handed the House of Representatives back to the people who literally drove this country into a ditch.
Oh,
so, yeah, I mean, 4 years, 4 years between Dim Sun and Jebby in 12? Hell yes.
Of course, it's laid out already. They know what they're going to do. Yeah, it takes nerve to talk about. Yeah, well, Democrats are spending too much. There's too much of a deficit. All of a sudden, these bastards are worried about a deficit. Now, they weren't worried about it when we were spending billions in Iraq, were they? No, they were waving the flag for George and for Cheney and that evil goddamn bastard, what's his name? They're Rumsfeld, you know?
Yeah.
That was okay when we spent all that money, but now, okay, we may be spending money on social services or Social Security or whatever, and that's bad.
You know, Matt Osborne wrote...
What's wrong with people? People are really stupid in this country.
Matt Osborne wrote to mention the fact that he now has a congressman in North Alabama, and that district has been Democrat, with the exception of the flip over by Parker Griffith, for a long, long time. But it's not anymore. And he's got a new congressman who thinks it would be a good idea to privatize the Veterans Administration.
Oh, that's good. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable, but not unbelievable because it's been set up this way. You know, they've got nerve to talk about Obama. He's going to be a socialist. Well, you know, the socialism runs in different forms, you know. Hitler and the Hitler crime family had a form of socialism as well. And a lot of it paralleled what the Bush crime family was doing. Look at the Patriot Act. Look at 9/11. You know, that was their Nuremberg.
There you go.
It's all set up. And for Obama to renew the Patriot Act, for Obama to stand there and say he's going to compromise. Now, why don't you just come out, if you're a real Democrat and you're a real person that was about change, like you campaigned for, why don't you just come out and say, these guys were criminals. We shouldn't have attacked a country that didn't attack us. We're going to investigate that. The economy is in a wreck because of the Bush crime family and the Republicans you just put in. That's why it's a wreck. That's why we have a deficit. That's why we took a record surplus that Clinton left, and we have a record deficit now, because Republican-controlled Congress allowed Republican-controlled White House to spend. He needs to come out and say that instead of, we'll compromise with you. With him and little wimpy Harry Reid. I am just so aggravated.
You have a right to be. Philip, it's good hearing from you, though, brother.
Yeah, good talking to you, too.
All right. Take a breath and, you know, don't take off the seatbelt.
Yes, I won't.
All right.
I'm securely fastened and ready for takeoff.
All right. Good deal, Philip. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see. What now? Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, an awful lot. I think you pretty much delineated what's been up, but, you know, I'm usually perfectly frank with you about some things. I may say some things that people might not like to hear, but I'm just going to say them if you don't mind.
Well, you just go right ahead.
Well, number one, I was never entranced by Obama in the first place. I had to hold my nose to vote for him. I really did. My choice would have been Hillary Clinton. And that's just the way I feel. And I think Obama is through. I mean, let's face it. The key to his presidency in Ohio and places like that last night was lost. Why was it lost? Because Obama basically sat on his ass and did not take the necessary measures to do what he should have done as president, and taking vacations every 6 weeks and things of that nature. You know, I think he was lulled into some type of false sense of complacency by the fact that he was swept into office 2 years ago. I mean, look at the scoreboard in America 2 years ago. A lot of blue. Went red last night. Well, the same thing could happen in 2 years, hence from now. It could go back to blue again. It certainly could. I mean, the temperament of Americans is it's very mercurial. And as far as the Tea Bag movement is concerned, or the Tea Party movement is concerned, and I expressed this to you in two parts the other night by email. Number one, I predicted this would happen. I said that last night's election would make 1994 look like an Easter pageant. And I was right. I said 50 or at least 60 seats. And that happened. Now, as far as that is concerned, the Tea Bag Party, as I mentioned last night, could be a golem or a Frankenstein monster that the Republicans have created for themselves. And it may turn back on them. Because these people are, at very best, not too well informed and easily disenchanted. And I do believe that could happen. Now, I listened to Harry Reid's speech last night, and he said that he had run a pretty tough race. And I think Harry Reid needs to get his party in line. And let's face it, you just can't say, well, I'm going to allow you to do what you want, and this, that, and the other. There needs to be more cohesion, and there needs to be more discipline among the Democratic Party. And as I've said many times on this program, they need to take a page from the Republicans' playbook and be united and, you know, act in unison, and they can't extend the laurel branch to a lot of these people who are bullies. I mean, when you do that as a kid on the playground to a bully, he takes your candy. He's not going to be a nice guy to you. That's all there is to it. And I hope that this will wake up the Democrats and just let them realize exactly how stupid they behaved and how woodenly stupid they have been in some of the actions that they have committed. It's not been a good thing. And the Obama presidency, as I perceive it, is through. He's history. There's no way he can win in 2012.
That is, I don't know that you're the first person who said it, but you've said it. That's the first time that's been said this plainly, so plainly on this program, Jim.
Well, I've always felt, Bob, like I say, I had to hold my nose to vote for that man. Because, number one, he had not finished his term in the Senate. Number two, what was so great about him to me? He never appealed to me. He just never did. I voted for him, mainly because I didn't want to have Sarah Palin a heartbeat away from the presidency. I'm just being perfectly honest with you. And if it offends some people, I'm sorry, but that's how I feel, and I have a right to say what I have.
Absolutely. You need not defend your words, Jim. There is a great amount of disenchantment with Barack Obama in liberal and progressive circles.
I mean, for example, when this oil spill occurred in the Gulf back in April 20th of this year, what did I say on this program? He should have had his ass down there on April 21st. No, he just sat up there and sat up there and sat up there and said, well, it'll correct itself and this, that, and the other. And finally, he did go down there and make some type of half-assed, hearted effort to display compassion and this, that, and the other. Well, it's just a question with him, too little, too late. And I just...
It was reminiscent of the time that W spent dawdling around before he got to the Gulf Coast during Katrina. And by the way, have you seen this latest out of from Dim Leader, the lowest moment of his presidency? Have you seen that?
No, what was that? What's going on?
He's been asked what was the lowest moment of his presidency, Jim. And for a guy who sat there and flogged 9/11 and waved the bloody shirt like he did, it wasn't 9/11. The lowest moment of George Bush's presidency, according to George W. Bush himself, was when Kanye West said, George Bush don't care about no black people.
George said that?
Yeah.
Well, Bob, does anything that came out of that man's mouth surprise you?
Matt Lauer interviewed him, and he said, you remember what he said? Dim Leader said, yes, I do. He called me a racist. Well, what he said, Matt Lauer has to tell him what he said. Well, what he said, George Bush doesn't care about black people. And W says, he's a racist. And I didn't appreciate it then. I don't appreciate it now. It's one thing to say I don't appreciate the way he's handled his business. It's another thing to say this man's a racist. I resent it. It's not true. And it was one of the most disgusting moments in my presidency.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about Barbara when she said those all those poor people who were evicted from their homes and evicted by Katrina, driven by a natural disaster, when they were all under that Astrodome in New Orleans, she said, George's mother said, well, they're probably living better than they ever have.
Oh, that was when they'd been moved into the Astrodome in Houston.
Exactly. And
we're just afraid that they're going to stay. They're living so well here in Houston. That pearl-clutching old beast.
Well, I mean, you know, and you know, here's the strange thing. I met her at a White House reception. And she was extremely cordial to me, very nice, very engaging. A great woman to play bridge with. But, I mean, that shows you the dichotomy.
I figure she cheats.
Yeah, well... I don't know
better. Well, no, it's a totally psychopathic family. They cheat at croquet.
Well, they are kind of, shall we say.
And see, that plays into my thesis as well. You know, HW, Poppy, and W became the first father-son team to inhabit the White House since John Adams and John Quincy. But that's not good enough. They want to be the only father-son-son team. They want to be an only of something in history, in the history of this country at least. And they will not rest.
I can tell you this. I think Bush number one was not totally very happy with the actions of his son. Because at least Bush number one had sense enough not to get us in Baghdad and to let Saddam Hussein remain there. And he realized the sense that we should not go into there, and we should get in there and get out as quickly as possible. And I'm sure he and his father had some serious discussions over that, but the son being so headstrong and so driven by whatever he was driven by, and I can't even begin to think.
Oh, no, Jim. Now he says that he wasn't in favor of invading Iraq.
Who, Bush too?
Yeah.
Oh, Bob, that's just crazy.
I know. That was a straw in the tequila bottle moment for me, too.
I mean, he couldn't wait to get in there. Number one, because he thought Saddam had threatened his father, and which was, I think, some kind of red herring in the first place. I mean, there were other things in there.
Let's see. Again, from the interview with Matt Lauer. Not everybody thought you should go to war, though. There were dissenters. Bush. Of course there were. You know, there were questions at the Pentagon. Colin Powell had questions. Brent Scowcroft, your father's former national security advisor and dear friend, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, I'm paraphrasing here, saying it's not a good idea to go to war in Iraq. So there were dissenting voices. Bush, sit down, Jim. Like I said, the seatbelt just stays on for the rest of the ride, okay?
Remember Shinseki? What happened to him?
Yeah. And Bush says, hey, I was a dissenting voice. I didn't want to use force. I mean, force is the last option for a president. And I think it's clear in the book that I gave diplomacy every chance to work. And I will also tell you the world's better off without somehow in power, and so are 25 million Iraqis. Of course, he doesn't want to mention the million Iraqis who, got dead.
Well, I mean, Bush, what did he do? He gave them, 48 hours to vacate the country and saying that he was using diplomacy? I mean, he basically...
But it's contrary to acknowledged history itself. It was March of 2002, I think, maybe May, when there was a cabinet meeting, and somebody asked him, what about Saddam? And George said, fuck Saddam. We're taking him out. That's a quote. That's not me using dirty words on the air. Those are the words of the president, the then president of the United States.
Well, George, played the part of the gunslinger coming into the OK Corral. He was just going to go in there and have his OK Corral moment with whomever his adversaries were at that time. And what he did, he sure screwed this country, and he screwed that country, and he screwed up everything he possibly could. And, I feel sorry for the president now. I'm loyal to him. I mean, I've taken so many oaths of loyalty to the presidency and the Constitution in my life and my career. I mean, I really take it very seriously. But, I mean, that was just a mistake of the first magnitude and what I consider to be an abuse of power, and I still consider it to be worthy of, and I hate to say this, war crimes. I've always said that. I mean, it was just basically they wanted to get in there and pondered about with shock and awe. Well, we've seen the shock and awe, all right. And the shock and awe has cost us, 9,000 lives? How many people have been killed over there? Just our own soldiers?
No, that's in excess of 5, I think.
Okay, 5. And, of course, not to mention the innocent civilians and things like that in Iraq. And now we've turned what was a fairly stable nation as far as stability in that part of the world is concerned with Saddam. And, Saddam was no angel. And as long as he was our son of a bitch, it was okay. But, there were a lot of practices that were going on over there that precipitated that war. For example, Saddam was upset because the Kuwaitis were using diagonal drilling methods to get to his oil and stuff like that. But at least under Saddam, as bad as he was, and he was no saint, I'm not trying to police.
No, I don't think anybody thinks you are.
No. There's no hagiography here with Saddam. I mean, he was just a real tough person to deal with, and that whole family was, but at least it would appear to me as though Iraq, and I may be mistaken, was a secular nation in which there were certain progressive measures in spite of Uday and Qusay and all those other people that we demonized and who probably are worth demonization. But nonetheless...
God, I had forgotten completely about Uday and Qusay.
Yeah, and of course, even Uday, I mean, or Qusay said, listen, if we go to war with America, and he told his older brother that, he said, our ass is gone. He said, you don't make no mistake about that. But, so many things have happened in the past 10 years. It's just absolutely incredible, and none of it's been good. I realize I'm being very general here. I'm not being specific like some of your other callers. I guess specificity is not my strong point at this particular evening when I have seen us lose the House of Representatives, but I'm really not surprised. But my hope is this, that people will begin to realize that these people have come into power, and they have come into power on the basis of slogans, empty promises that can't be kept, and that the teabag people are going to feel like Jerry Falwell did about Ronald Reagan. Hey, we've been screwed, blued, and tattooed. I mean, did you see those people who gathered on the mall in August, the teabagger movement?
Oh, sure.
What did they look like to you?
Ignorant, racist, morons.
Well, they didn't impress me exactly being the very bold and brightest of American society to be portrayed on television. I mean, I think they were sitting there in lawn chairs and up there, you know, with Glenn Beck leading the faithful like Elmer Gantry. And, you know, these people are just, well, they're not the best and the brightest. But I'll guarantee you one thing. If they don't get what they want from the Republicans, they're going to turn on them. And it's not going to be a very pretty picture for the Republicans.
But see, that Jim, I think that's maybe where there's a flaw in your thesis. Because for the teabaggers to turn on their Republican masters would require a degree of introspection of which a teabagger is incapable.
I don't know, Bob. You let economic situations begin to impact on them.
No, but just wait a minute, though. They've only the Repigs only have the House, so they've got a built-in excuse. Well, we're trying to save America, but them liberal, socialist, communist, fascists in the Senate and that Muslim Kenyan won't let us. See how it works?
Well,
they don't have to do anything for 2 years. All they have to do is make excuses, and the little bobblehead teabaggers will go, yeah, Marvelline, that's right. If we could have just got rid of them communists in the Senate, we could have had America gone back to God by now.
Well, I can understand your train of thought, and maybe you're right, and maybe you're wrong. I don't know. I hope you're wrong, and I hope that these people begin to realize that we've been had. And as far as the religion aspect of the whole thing is concerned, that was the driving force behind the Tea Party movement and things of that nature. But I think they're going to realize that people like Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck have simply used them and used that particular belief system in which they subscribe as a means to trick them. And like I say, I firmly believe that in enlisting their support, they have created a golem, a monster. And the genie's out of the bottle, as you told me in your email, and I think it's a very possibility that it could turn on them very, very quickly. And I just hope...
I hope it does.
And I hope that the Democrats will realize that diversity is not our strong point, that unity and cohesion of action and the ability to realize, look, we have had our last Munich. We have had our last little piece of paper being waved in our faces saying peace in our time. And realize, hey, we need to turn around, execute a volte-face, an about-face, and stand up to these people.
You know what? I think the most crucial. I agree with you, Jim. And I think the most crucial thing that happens that can happen with all of that is that the Senate must take power away from Harry Reid. I love the idea of Barbara Boxer as Speaker.
I like Barbara Boxer.
I do too, and I think she would make an excellent House, Speaker. I think she would make an excellent Senate Majority Leader.
The Democratic Party needs to reexamine their own leadership and their own ability of people to lead and lead cohesively, and if necessary, to lead with an iron hand. And I don't mean to allow any diversity to get in their way. We can't afford this diversity and all this crap to continue. We're going to have to take a page from their playbook and use it against them. I mean, what are you going to do? If a man's got a gun and he's going to shoot you, you don't wave a rose petal at him, do you? Or extend...
Some Democrats would, Jim. Some Democrats would.
Well, that's not my idea of Democrats and things of that nature. It's not. And the way that the Democratic Party that I was brought up to believe in and subscribe to and support. And, you know, it's a matter of... Even Obama today, right on the Internet, saying, you know, I need to do a better job. Yeah. Too little too late, friend. I hate to tell you. You're a one-timer, and that's it. And the Democrats need to start searching for somebody who can lead them and be decisive and mean what they say and say what they mean and to not play around with words and to deal with these bullies on their own terms. I mean, like I said before early in this conversation, when you're dealing with bullies, you don't deal with them effectively by letting them take your candy or take your marbles away at recess. You stand up and you take a punch for the lower jaw and then you kick them in the groin by any possible means. And that's where I think we're at now, right now. By any possible means. I don't care what it is. We need a lockstep, and there needs to be in a spirit of authoritarianism which will guide the Democratic Party out of this doldrum and make these people respect us. Even the dumbest teabagger will say, oh my God, those people do have some spirit. They do have some ability to have a spine. I mean, you know, for the last 2 years, Obama's spine has been in the shop somewhere, and I don't know what he's been using for one.
Oh, just getting along without it. I agree. I agree with much of what you say, Jim, and I thank you very much. And we can only wait and see, can't we?
Well, we'll see, and thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Take care, Jim.
Good night.
A couple of observations. Jim brought up the issue of the number of people killed in Georgia's wars that Obama took to his breast as his own. And in mentioning those killed, I think it important that we mention also those who were maimed. I'm not sure exactly what the number is. I'm pretty sure it's more than 50,000 people. Probably as many as 100,000 whose lives have been forever shattered by the decisions made in hate and ignorance by George W. Bush. And they deserve to be remembered because of people like Mo Brooks in North Alabama now, who would like to privatize their ongoing care after the sacrifices that they made in Georgia's wars of choice. And by the way, there is another issue that arises out of this election, and that is the redistricting issue. David in Tennessee informing me that based on the numbers as he understands them, there will likely be 12 more Republican seats and 12 fewer Democratic seats after 2012, after redistricting, and after gerrymandering. And that is, and of course, that makes it all the more difficult for the Democrats to ever take control of the House back in anything approaching the near future. You know, here's hoping that once they realize that they've been cruelly and cynically used, the teabaggers will in fact turn on their masters. But you know what? I think it's in the third chapter of Flip-Floppians where it says, "And lo, did the baggers turn upon their pig-licking leaders and did make a far-off noise. And yea, verily, did it come to pass then and therein there at that time that their noise was as pebbles against the walls of Jericho." and signifying not just a heck of a whole lot. You know what I mean? I really do. I hope they have the sense to rebel against them, but I sincerely do not think they have that kind of intellectual prowess available to them, because they're bought and paid for in the first place. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, what are you doing to me?
What have I done?
This talk about the election and the Republicans losing, you know my philosophy, I have to just strongly disagree with you across the board, because I think Republicans win no matter what. And I think they're just sitting back right now, Bob, and saying, can you believe it? We took the House. We had no plan. We're one of the worst parties ever. We don't have to do anything, and we can just continue. We don't even need to know the issues anymore. This is awesome. That's what I think's happening. As far as what Jim is saying, Jim, I have something for you. I'm reading on a message board, and this is why it's never going to happen, what you're thinking, Jim, because we have way too many misinformed people in this country and people who do not want to vote. Here's a sampling of one quote off a message board, and it's priceless, Bob, because it's priceless in its ignorance. I'm quoting now. I will never vote for anybody. I live my life how I can get it. There you go, people. That's most of the youth. That's most of the people coming in, and that's most of this country. And I think that's right there is where you say that's all she wrote when it concerns the new voting bloc.
Well, I see. We talk about the teabaggers turning or becoming a monster, as if we think that when we talk about them that way. That means that we think that they really are an organic process. They're not. They are a corporate creature. You know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce put $75 million, and God knows how much of that foreign money, David, into this election process.
To me, the teabaggers won, and they won in Maine big because they got the governorship. I don't know if you know that, but Paul LePage, who I've been saying that this guy is insane as bats in the belfry. He just won the governorship. He believes that we need intelligent design in school. He also believes he's one of those pull yourself up from your bootstraps, wants to eliminate a lot of welfare. The Department of Education and the public school systems in Maine try to eliminate a lot of that and just continue going down the line. I mean, that's what we have here. And the problem is since that Citizens United, you're going to have more and more of those candidates. And with what I just said about a sample statement of the current population of the youth in this country, I think we're in for a powder keg unlike you and I and anyone else that's listening has ever seen. And, by the way, Paul LePage, he's going to be in for the long haul. I wouldn't be surprised if they vote him for another term. I hate to be cynical like that.
But is it now? But LePage, is he? I mean, is he a Maine Republican? Is he a Susan Collins, Olympia Snow Republican, or is he a bagger?
He's a straight up teabagger, Bob. Straight up teabagger. He told Obama. He was one of the candidates who told Obama. He said, "I'll tell you what I'll say to Obama. I'll tell him to go to hell." I mean, that's the kind of guy he is, and that's who we have for governor, people. So here's the facts. Here's the facts. This is what I told Matt Osborne, and this is what I tell a lot of people listening right now. The teabaggers won, and they won because all they wanted to do was get these positions and seats of power. They knew that so many would fall to the wayside. They built it up so much that they thought the hype fest was so extreme that everyone would just come rushing to their defense. But they probably knew that most of the people, they knew the ones that they bet on seriously and read their resume, so to speak, they knew that they had a really good chance of getting in. And that's the lesson, people. We're playing checkers, chess, not checkers. And that's why LePage won. LePage won because he's a gigantic businessman. The paper here my local paper here just fell over him. You know, it's funny. I was talking to my mom. I said, you know, you shouldn't really just she was phone banking for a lot of people, and she started saying, I don't think LePage is going to win. And I told her, Mom, there's four candidates on the ballot. This strikes me as so stinky you can't even believe it. And she says, no, but I was talking to old people on the phone. I was like, that's not gonna do anything. I said, those old people that you've already gotten a list that's predetermined of people that are not for LePage. So, and then I told her, I said, yeah, I think LePage has a good chance. And the reason why I knew that, people, the reason why I knew that, because the signs were crazy. So we're experiencing a transforming destructive red state all across this country. And we're going to experience it more, people, because of the Citizen United decision. And also, why, Bob? Because people just love mythologies. They love fantasy. And they run more and more toward fantasy than they run to reality. And that's why we're just going to continue to go down that path. And all I can say is brace yourself for it. And you know what was funny, Bob? Here's the funny thing. We didn't comment on this, but I have to comment on this. You know the rally with the Jon Stewart rally and the fact that he came out? You know what's hilarious is that when he brought out Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow, that was a surreal moment for me. Because then I said, you know what? That guy really is, when I was singing that song, I said, that guy really is the epitome of indie rock. He's an independent, Bob. And here's the funny thing about it is after he was done that song, and then after they, I mean, for people who were like bowled over by that rally, I wouldn't be. I thought it was pretty much dragged to the core. They could have ended it after 2 hours, but for some reason they wanted to go for 5 hours. Well, knock yourself out. I spent a lot of time watching it, but when Jon Stewart came out and he was about to have that galvanizing moment that we knew he wouldn't have. I'm sorry to be cynical like this, but I know this much about Jon Stewart. He's not going to do what we need in this country, because he's afraid of that shut up and just entertain.
Well, he's a comic.
Yeah, I know. He's not like George Carlin. He wants to be loved by everybody. And when he started talking, and he was having his honest type of Glenn Beck moment where he's trying to reach out to the people and talk to them, but it was sincere instead of insincere. But then, you know, it was that moment of, okay, there's supposed to be a lightning rod here, and you want us to do what? Everybody quit shouting. And I thought, oh, man, you are so naive. You are so gullible. You have no idea what the makeup of this country is like.
David, I just got an email in from our buddy Marty in California, and he says, I would like to agree with Jim's logic, and I think this plays into what you're saying. That's why I'm sharing it right now.
Yeah.
He said, I would like to agree with Jim's logic. The problem with it is that the Republican Party and these moronic teabaggers have the 24/7 Mighty Wurlitzer filter of Radio Rwanda and Chicken Noodle News, along with the Alex Jones the thing, who apparently is calling this the new American Revolution, to tell them that things are well and all is good. Or the opposite, because if these teabaggers don't do anything but get fat in office, you know, which they no doubt will. And you cannot, and again, it's something I said earlier in the program, and you cannot discount, David, the fact that they own the media. No matter how many times they squeal liberal media, corporate America owns the media, and corporate America owns the baggers.
I mean, where do you think these two baggers are going to go, including my governor, all across the talk radio and all the media outlets that are right-wing corporately owned? They're going to have a festival, man. They can go from place to place all day long.
You know, do you think that Daryl Issa, that not convicted but indicted, accused felon from California who's going to be in charge of investigations, do you think he doesn't already have a list, David, of the abuses of the power of that Kenyan Muslim in the White House? You know, I expect him to run, David, run into the House of Representatives wearing a scarlet cloak and ermine robes, screaming, nobody expects the Issa Inquisition! But the Issa Inquisition is getting ready to roll.
Issa definitely a problem. I'll tell you something that I think that, and I hate to say this, but I really do think we're at this point, Bob. I think this country is literally that stupid or this stupid that we could just the media could just roll out the fears of Obama being impeached without even you don't even have to say anything about the Senate. They can just continue to carry on and on and on, and we'll, people in the background, the same people and the critical thinking people, but you can't have impeachment if you don't have you. They won't hear that. And they'll just continue on and on, and you'll just see.
You know, the impeachment of the president is predicated under the Constitution, David, upon high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right.
Well, the Clinton impeachment tells us that it doesn't even have to be a crime. It doesn't even have to be a misdemeanor. It can be made up BS. There were no crimes.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, they could really. The Republicans can impeach for being for not showing the birth certificate. I'm not kidding, and I'm not being radical and out there. I just happen to know how I happen to know how the Republican mind works.
Oh, I agree.
Or what passes for a Republican mind.
I agree with you, and I think that as time marches on, you're going to see the worst ridiculous excuses for impeachment that you've ever seen in history, and you'll be seeing the mainstream media, the lamestream, the for-profit media. They'll be out on the front line saying, "You know what? That sounds reasonable to me."
Yeah.
And
well, see, all he's got to do is produce the birth certificate, and it'll all go away.
And you know, the other thing is that we should really. I think we need to restructure on how we get out the youth to vote more, and we need to. And I was listening to, and Hartman was making this mistake too. He was saying right before the election, he was saying to 2010 election. And you know this, Bob. This is like the most. This is the obvious selling point that a lot of progressives and liberals do on talk radio. The 2010 election is important, and there's a but coming. But the 2012 election is our most important election in history.
Every one of them are.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the problem is that when we're mapping out a plan for strategy and dominating different regions and areas of this country, we need to plan right as soon as the election is over.
It starts today.
Right, it starts today.
But I wonder how many people have started today. There needs to be not navel gazing, but you know some of what Jim's talking about. You know, get in line and march.
Exactly. And one last thing before I go. You know what today is, right, Bob?
November the 3rd.
It's prayer meeting Wednesdays.
Oh yeah, it is prayer meeting Wednesday.
I was wondering. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are heartbroken because they didn't hear the intro. I didn't hear it.
I didn't do it. Just because I was, it seemed superfluous or out of place to do it today. This is the post game. This is the wrap up. This is the denouement.
Okay. I thought it was.
We will return to your regularly scheduled prayer meeting Wednesday, next Wednesday.
Okay. Well, I think where we're headed for, and. Did you see the statistic on how much of the youth voted this election?
No, I didn't. I was wondering.
20%?
Hoo-wee!
This is, I mean...
I wonder if it was higher in California because of Prop 19.
I'll tell you what. I'm where... I don't know if John Fox agrees with this or not, but I am for forced voting all across this country, because I don't really think they're going to people aren't going to turn out. But if you force them in a situation where if you don't go out to vote, you lose your state license, or you lose your driver's license, or you get severely fined. What's it going to be?
I think a key to that is to make our election day a national holiday.
And that
no more of this BS if I couldn't get off work.
And if we did that, Bob, we really wouldn't have that much of a. An issue with the Republicans' vote we're facing. We would still have an issue because of Citizens United or not, but that would give us another advantage if we could do that. Because the youth aren't completely crazy yet.
No.
They're reasonable chaps.
Instant runoff voting, a national holiday.
There you go.
And yeah, things would, but of course, because it would work, the Republicans want no part of it. And I can't overemphasize the fact that it may be too late to do anything about Citizens United. I'm not trying to, you know, just get in the warm bath and no.
Uh-huh.
But it would take years to amend the Constitution, and we don't have years. There is only one remedy. And you know what? Let's take a page out of the right-wing playbook, David.
Yeah.
There is only one remedy for Citizens United, and that is the impeachment of Alito and Roberts, and that ain't gonna happen now. That much was a total victory.
Hmm.
We don't begin to know the trouble we're in. I know that sounds a little bit odd because a little bit ago I said, you know, they just, the Republicans just want to get their front feet in the trough. Well, they've got their front feet in the trough, and they want to keep them there. So between redistricting and not being able to do anything at all about the Citizens United money,
Yeah. We
really are politically screwed. It is going to get more and more difficult for Democrats to get elected, and it'll be harder to elect. They're going to get eliminated to the tune of 12 more seats in 2012. You know, Jesus Christ.
I know. There's actually, I don't know if we've talked about it, but I'm interested in watching this. I'll send a link if I can. I don't know if there are fake links out there, but there's a documentary out there called Gerrymandering. Have you heard about this?
Well, I know about gerrymandering.
Yeah, well, there's an in-depth documentary that a lot of people are claiming and really excited about because it's, I guess it's really informative, and they put a lot in... a lot of research into it, and I guess it's getting some attention. So, for anyone who wants to see a documentary on gerrymandering, there's one that's out there. I don't know if it's playing at your theater or anything.
But you might look around and find it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, David, thanks a million, brother.
All right, Bob. Later.
All right, take care. Bye. Let's see, about 10 minutes till, well, 9 minutes before the hour. We will continue apace and onward. You know the number, 877-443-2366. Hey, welcome to the program.
I think you got me again, Bob.
Oh, I did. Stand by. Okay, I'll put you back, Megan. And, okay, let's try this button. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Bob. It's Wendy. How are you?
I'm fine, Wendy. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I just wanted to talk about the West Virginia election and kind of get your insight on it.
Sure. Yeah, to the extent that I have any insight.
Well, I guess my main concern is there are so many people in this state that blame Obama for our election. And... you know, 8 years before that, what did we have? And, you know, you can't blame everything on Obama, you know?
Well, sure you can. Sure you can.
I mean, you can, but is it fair?
Fairness does. I mean, I'm not being difficult to be difficult, Wendy. Fairness doesn't enter into it. There is no truth in a Republican. And frankly, the Democrats, most of the Democrats in this state are not Democrats like I'm a Democrat. They're not liberal.
Well, they're not. And, you know, that was one of my main issues for the Senate race is we had Joe Manchin, John Racey. I don't know who the Constitution Party candidate was.
Yeah, he was a loon.
And Jesse Johnson. And I thought, well, I would rather vote for Jesse Johnson and then... people get all upset and they say, well, then you're giving Racey a vote. I mean, when can you ever have?
Yeah, but that's dead from the neck up reasoning. No, if you want to give Racey a vote, you do that by voting for Racey, not by voting for the candidate that your conscience tells you to vote for.
Right.
But, you know, I'm really proud of coming up with Blanche Manchin. Because he's Blanche Lincoln with better hair. So Blanche Lincoln's gone from Arkansas, but she's been replaced by a senator from West Virginia who doesn't have the dignity or the gravitas or, frankly, anything else resembling, what Robert Byrd was. All he's going to do.
I'm not about writing him in.
you know, that might not have been a bad idea, because frankly, the body of Robert Byrd would be a better senator. As conservative as he was. But the thing is, he was a smart man, and Joe Manchin is not a smart man.
Well, and that's the other thing is, Byrd actually would listen to people. He would listen to people.
Look, Ed Wiley walked from the Coal River Valley all the way to Washington, D.C. And he and Senator Byrd sat down with him and treated him with respect and dignity.
Well, but even if you look at the instance of Jim Wiley, what would most people think about what he did? What would they think?
I'm sure some people thought that it was you know. Well, most people wouldn't have that kind of courage, Wendy.
No, they wouldn't. But what do you think that, you know, when you heard that story, what do you think most people, especially in this state, would think about that situation and what he did?
Well, there were a lot of heads buried in the sand about Marsh Fork Elementary, and that's why Ed Wiley walked to Washington to raise awareness of the poisoning of children at Marsh Fork Elementary. And there's a lot of people in this state.
Marsh Fork area.
Pardon?
Was he from the Marsh Fork area?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, his granddaughter went to that school.
Well, and this is my other issue with that. You know, I understand my husband grew up in that area, and it's very sad what's happening there. But I think one of the problems is you have all these outside people coming in concerned about the cause. And I'm not saying that they are not ill. I mean, they have a good, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I think they have good intentions. But you know how people from West Virginia are, outside sources coming in, outside people coming in to try to take a...
And yet, Wendy, they will gladly tolerate a foreign corporation coming in and ruining their drinking water, and ruining their air, and ruining their land. You know, let's remember that one of the biggest coal controllers in eastern Kentucky is now a firm from India. Let's remember that there are massive amounts of coal being pulled out of West Virginia by a firm that is directly owned by Russia or by Russians.
But the people in the community are not educated to those facts. And what can we do to educate them to those facts?
Well, that's what some of those people that you referred to as coming in from somewhere else are trying to do. And I know a lot of them, and they're good, 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 good people.
They're bad people, but I'm saying that the relationships they have with those people, it's just a cultural barrier, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
Well, but if that's the case, then that's the fault of the people who are clannish, insular, and bigoted.
Well, but this is my other...
Because, see, I'm well familiar with that outside agitator stuff, because that's exactly what they said in the South when the Freedom Riders came down. We don't need no outside agitators coming down here and telling us how to treat our Negroes. They said that. And it's no different with people interested in human rights coming into southern West Virginia, because that is where the human rights struggle is. That's one of the loci of the human rights struggle in the United States right now.
But how do you come in and tell these people, Bob? You know, I make nothing because I teach school. I don't care because I love my job. But how do you come in and tell an uneducated person who's making $80,000 a year, making good money for their family, that there are things more important than money? That's what it comes down to, money.
Well, you would think that they would already know that because, most of these people profess to be, hardcore Christians. And the book is just full of admonitions that there's things more important than money.
Is you can claim to be a Christian, but there's a big difference in fundamentalist evangelical Christians, which you know concentrate this area, where they feel that they are entitled. How do you change that mentality?
One person at a time. That's how you do it. And frankly, that's what's happening. There are a lot of people who don't like what Massey is doing, but they won't speak out because they're afraid of Massey.
Well, I mean, I'm not afraid of Massey. I'm not afraid of anybody. But it just discourages me when I talk to people in my community, and most of the people in the community do not agree with you, and they don't agree with me. How do you change that? I mean, one person at a time, that's, you know, I understand that's important, but...
Some of the lights will have to go on for people, arguably the hard way. And what I mean by that, Wendy, is that there are lessons learned. You know, the people who work on mountaintop removal sites, who live anywhere near where they work, they're not just poisoning the tree huggers, as they like to call us.
But they don't.
They're poisoning their own families.
You know, they don't live there. They might work on a mountaintop removal site, but they live in Beckley, in Woodcrest, or in Glade Springs. They don't live where they work.
Well, you know, it's very true, that old saying that, and I first heard it used by Judy Bonds, whom I love dearly. She said, it's an old quote, and I always screw up who it was that said it, so I won't even try. But the line goes like this. It is hard to get a person to understand something when the contents of his wallet depend on him not understanding it.
Well, that's just that's one of the saddest things I believe I've ever heard.
And it's also reality, Wendy. It's what's ruled this state.
It is reality. And, you know, I'll tell you, I had a conversation with a certain congressman, not going to mention his name, and my whole family, they immigrated from Scotland and moved to McDowell County to work in the mines. My whole family worked in the coal mines. And my grandfather was able to profit from that. He owned a furniture store. He owned several restaurants, apartment buildings, things like that. And he passed away, but my grandmother lived in that community long after he passed away. And her house, after they strip mine behind her house, flooded every time it rained.
Sure.
And I spoke to a certain congressman, and I said, you know, it's really upsetting to me that my grandmother's house floods every time it rains. You know, it's very disconcerting. She's lived there her whole life. She's 80 years old. That's where she goes to church. That's where her bridge club is. That's where she plays golf. And she's being forced out of her home. And this congressman told me that there was money for people like her to move out of that community.
Right, move.
And I said, well, she probably has a lot more money than you do. She's lived there for years. And why should she be forced out of that community? Because you see that as progress. And I guess what bothers me is it doesn't matter if they're Democrats or Republicans in the state. I mean, this has gone back 200 years since people have come in and raped our land and taken our coal and not helped the people. It's never ending. What can we do?
I'm gonna say something, Wendy, I hope you will take it to heart. Jim just wrote in an email, and he just said, go, Wendy. I applaud her honesty and insight. The fact of the matter is, we need your voice. We need voices like yours to speak up. Because there is an authenticity to it. Judy Bonds' family has been, in the Coal River Valley, she's related to the first white settler. You know, eight generations. And there's an authenticity to that. I remember when we set up an informational table at a little thing here near my home about mountaintop removal and what was going on the mountain up above above town. And one of the mountaintop removal workers came over and looked at Agnes and me and said, "I just want to know where you're from." You know what I said? "About 2 miles up the road, and there's nine generations of my family buried out there. Where are you from?" See, there's a lot of messaging on this stuff, Wendy, and you know, you've been subjected to some of it, you know, these outsiders. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of people who have a lot of family here, whose families were here long before any damn coal baron came along and decided to blow up our homes.
Exactly. And my family, like I said, they were Scot-Irish. They moved here and they farmed.
Right. They weren't miners. They were farmers.
They took their farms away. I mean, I don't know if you know where Crumpler, West Virginia is.
Yep.
It's in McDowell County. And they completely stripped it. And now they put a four-wheeler trail.
Yeah, the Hatfields and McCoys Trail.
Yeah, what else can they do? And, you know, when you talk to it, well, it's progress. It's progress. For who? The politicians in this state, the businessmen in this state, the outside people who come in from Australia, Finland, China, wherever, and buy up our mines. I mean, you know, it used to be people, the Rockefellers and folks like that, that came from Pittsburgh and New York and bought up our mines. But now you're talking about completely out people, not even in our country, that are buying these mines.
Right, but the thing is, the ignorant are messaged at. It's just like the overall larger conversation nationally, Wendy. The ignorant people in this state are messaged at relentlessly by the coal companies. And the message, and what's more important and much more pernicious, Wendy, is the fact that the messaging isn't just on TV, it's not just on the radio, it's not just all those the filthy friends of coal ads and stickers and everything. They get messaged at out of the pulpit, too. I mean, I know people involved in the clergy who have been run out of the fight against mountaintop removal.
Well, they're probably Methodist, Presbyterian, or Catholic.
You know, the Baptist Church is pro mountaintop removal. A lot of Methodist churches are as well. And you know, when you put the authority of Almighty God behind it, Wendy, then it's awful hard for a layperson to sit there and disagree. They're, you know, the people aren't a lot of folks in this state are not like us, Wendy, because they're not willing to challenge the kind of stuff that comes out of the pulpit. If the preacher says it, it must be right.
Bob, can I challenge you for a moment?
No, please do.
He said Methodist churches, the General Conference of the Methodist Church for the state of West Virginia, I'm talking about United Methodist Churches, have come out in the Book of Discipline against mountaintop removal.
Oh, I know that.
He's some kind of free Methodist or, you know, one of those made-up churches, kind of like those made-up Baptist churches.
Well, it's the kind, but the thing is, the right-wing influence inside Protestantism in particular is very sneaky. And so I'm not talking about a general statement from the Book of Discipline. I'm talking about what happens on Sunday mornings in pulpits. And I know it happens, and it's a United Methodist church.
Well, and I think if that's something that happens, that you need to talk to the bishop or the deist from that area, because that's completely against United Methodist teachings. It really is.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt you for a moment. But the thing is, that's one of those things where they have to tread lightly, Wendy, because if all of your mountaintop removal workers leave your church, or all the people who are sucked up in the coal industry leave your church, pretty soon you don't have a church. And people will walk over that kind of stuff. Because there's always another church down the road that's preaching blow up more of God's mountains.
Well, and that's sad.
it's sad, but it's also true. Wendy, I really enjoyed this conversation. And I encourage you, like I said, to add your voice to the voices of those who are trying to save this state. And the other thing is that, you know, folks have to, you know, folks outside this state have to get noisy as well. And they have in profusion. You know, just because of what happened in the House doesn't mean we're going to give up on our efforts to you know, legislatively end it. But the fact of the matter is, it has to end. Because, you know, it's like the article that, or the email that I read from Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist, earlier, where he said, you know, we are fast approaching a point where we're not going to have enough water to drink in this country. And one of the reasons we're not going to have enough water to drink is because of mountaintop removal and what it does to our waters. And that, combined with fracking and the Marcellus shale drilling, is a nightmare for this country that we don't even begin to comprehend.
Well, I hope that we could all just have a positive attitude and a positive outlook and try to do the best that we can as individuals. And like you said, it starts with one person, Bob. It does. And if we can just shine that light within ourselves and try to enlighten people, then that's all we can do.
Hear, hear. Well said, Wendy. Thank you very much. You take care.
You too.
Bye. And, by the way, I wanted to share something with you before we go to the next caller. I just had an email from Matt Osborne. Run over to osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com. He's got a little tribute that he has posted. A very creative fellow, Matt is. And he has, I love this, he has announced the formation of the First Alabama. And the First Alabama is his grouping together of people who have been a real boost to him, and who also are interested in advancing progressive liberal thinking and liberal ideas. And he's named a number of people in this post. The name of the post is Militia. In short, Matt Osborne has formed his own militia, the First Alabama. The mascot of the First Alabama is a fierce, ill-tempered rodent, if you remember the line from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's a sharp, nasty teeth. Because we are tenacious and talented. And there's a direct thank you going out to you, listeners to the horn. He's named his officer corps. I didn't even rank lieutenant, I'm just a chaplain. well, you know, chaplains have rank too. Maybe I could be general chaplain. I'll have to talk to Matt about that. But go and have a look at osborneinc.com, and the post is Militia. Militia, M-I-L-I-T-I-A. And it's probably right there close to the top if you head over. Onward we go to the phones. Nope. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Andy?
It's Andy.
What's up?
Redwood City. I don't know. My heart really sank after the results this morning. I was listening last night. You know, there were some good news program. Amy Goodman did a really nice job covering the elections, but I was devastated when I saw the number of House seats that went down.
Didn't you expect it? I mean, I know a lot of us said, I'm not sure that we buy into this meme, and I don't think that their meme was entirely correct. But there was too much money in there, Andy, for this not to happen. This is the Citizens United election. This isn't the Teabagger election. This is the Citizens United election.
Right. Did you see the email I sent you? That there was a study of 74 races.
Yeah.
58 of the winners benefited from big money by outspending the competitors. And out of those 74 races, only 14 losers had bigger amounts of money spent on their campaign versus their competitor.
Yeah.
So by percentage baseball, big money wins big.
Big unlimited money. Big unlimited secret money.
Your odds are maybe 6 to 7 times better if you can outspend your competition. And certainly what they did to Alan Grayson, man, that just blew my mind big time. Gosh, he was such a great voice for us.
He was, and I somehow don't think he's going to go away. He'll pop up somewhere. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up, heck, I don't know, MSNBC maybe? We need more voices because, you know, something else that dawned on me based on what was said earlier in the program, don't discount the fact, I think it was Philip calling from San Diego who said, you know, there was the beginning of a groundswell of progressive radio happening in this country, and then it all went away. And it went away as soon as Clear Channel realized that it was actually proving to be effective.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be a great voice on the radio, too. The guy, he's supposed to be a millionaire, so I would think he could keep himself going for a pretty long time if he had to without...
Oh, yeah, I don't think he's going to be in a soup line anytime soon.
I would think, yeah, somebody might pick him up. That would be dynamite.
But what
I also want to mention, which bugged me, was Harry Reid. You know, here's a guy, you know, similar to, you know, what happened a number of years ago from, now I forget his name, from South Dakota, who used to be head of the...
Yeah, and he's a big lobbyist now.
Yeah. For Harry Reid to win that race against Angle, which should have been a chip shot, you know, which shouldn't have even been a race, he sucked out a lot of money from the Democratic Party, from the DSCC, I think,
yeah.
Democratic Senatorial Committee, to fund that race so he could go after Sharon Angle. And think about that, the money that he sucked out of the race that could have gone to a guy like Russ Feingold or some other Democrats.
Yeah, who had spines and brains.
Right, right. And he just sucked out all this money. And that I just find that awful that happened. And also concerning...
And to come out ready to... You know, he came right out of the gate ready to surrender, too. That's the part that just took my head off.
Yeah, I know. I heard you talking. Yeah, he's all ready to compromise. Mr. Cotton, like, what has he been doing? God, if that's not what you call a compromise, I don't know what is. A fighter? Baloney.
Yeah, it's not Obamacare. What was Baucus Care?
Baucus Care, exactly.
That was one compromise after another. And, you know, I heard Bill Maher point out the fact, Andy, that, and it's true, the radical socialist communist takeover of government by government of health care is actually the bill that Bob Dole proposed in 1994.
Right. Well, it's Romney Care. It's exactly what he did in Massachusetts. It's just, you know, a vast giveaway to the privatized health care industry, the insurance companies. It was just a giveaway. God, they made out like bandits. Get 30 million new customers, paying customers. What a deal. And subsidized by the government. Can't go wrong. Keep the privatized system going.
And
the other thing that bummed me out about this election, too, is one-third of the people that showed up for 2008 for the presidential election didn't show up here.
Yeah, they stayed home in droves.
Right. And if Democrats don't show up to vote, they don't win. And Obama was such a failure. You know, like, Michelle Obama would rather be eating escargot in Spain than out there doing the heavy lifting they should have been doing 6 months ago. Instead, it's vacation time. Right? It's time to go to Spain. It's time to have fun. And they should have been on top of it, you know, 6 months before this election, a year, you know.
Well, I refuse to suggest, Andy, that the White House did not screw up monumentally. And again, it's the messaging. You've got the most profound bully pulpit in the entire world. And you can't fend off Rush Limbaugh?
Right.
That's pathetic. That is pathetic.
You know, there were so many things he did do that people didn't know about. You know, in particular, he did give a tax cut.
Yeah.
He gave a tax cut bigger than Bush's tax cut to the middle class.
Right, but as noted, he didn't send out the letter saying, I gave you a tax cut.
Right, that didn't come through.
Well, look, you know, they say that Tea Party stands for taxed enough already. Well, Obama gave him a tax cut. So you would think if that's what they were really all about, you know, they'd be happy.
And he lowered the deficit. He had a budget that came through that lowered the deficit by like $190 billion or something. Bush didn't do that. Bush increased the deficit. Obama lowered it. He made the deficit less with his budget. And 90% of the big forecasted deficit of this $13 trillion, 90%, $11 trillion of that is Bush's. Bush. He just should have kept, but instead, he wanted to play like Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Conciliator. Give Bush all, he was even giving Bush credit for the great job he did in the Iraq War. He will not say anything bad about the Bushes. He cannot get himself to say anything bad. God, it's just such a non-fighter. Put the blame where it lies, man. And he won't do that. He won't point that out. He just can't get himself to do that. And what's the results? We lose big time.
And
they say a lot of these voters, too, are swing voters, are independents. And the independents just fly back and forth without thought. They're not happy. They just jump to the other party, you know, without any thought whatsoever. And those are the people, man, you got to get their ear somehow. And he's not doing it. And when you talk to Sandra before, too, and people have to understand, too, the one only good thing, how little good it is that we did knock off 28 blue dogs in this.
And you know what? That is good news, Andy. But again, you know, can we message on this? Can we get this out? The fact of the matter is, voters given a choice prefer real Republicans to fake ones.
Right.
And that's the message.
A caucus of 54 blue dogs down to 28 compared to a progressive caucus now, I think, of about 77. So definitely we're blowing the blue dogs out of the water, but who has the more? Who seems to have the most powers? Friggin' blue dogs. But, man, they're cut in half now. And also, I read the third.
Well, is this? Can we finally admit that this is the ultimate rejection of Rahm Emanuel?
Well, like you said, it's exactly like you said with the Harry Truman thing. Now, if you have a choice between a real Republican and a FUPA, fake Republican, one in name only, and the Democrat, you're going to vote for the real Republican. Why would you not? I think the only thing will be, can we actually get Howard Dean back in there and we can get progressives running in these seats?
Well, does Tim Kaine go away now?
Can't they come out and say this guy failed? And he failed more miserably than anybody in that position in probably the history of the party. I know this was the biggest turnaround in the House in 100 years. I've been hearing that said. This has probably got to be the biggest loss in the House ever. And you think maybe they would get rid of him? And freaking, they took out a guy that brought them victory. Amazing. And gave him no position. Nothing.
No, because that's the kind of vindictive prick that Rahm Emanuel is.
Absolutely.
I mean, I hate to talk like that way, but he is.
Right. And Begala can go to hell, too. Another son of a gun mouthing off, you know. Let's go more to the center. Yeah, right. And also, I completely agree with Jim. Man, I think it's over for Obama. I really do. It's got to be over. When you sustain that kind of loss, man, you got to take a... That's a message, man. How do you resurrect that? You know, once you have an impression, there's a positioning in the mind of that kind of loss, how do you dig yourself out is beyond me.
But is there any point in noting, Andy, that rejection is a rejection, I mean, based on who did the rejecting, is there any point in noting that it's they rejected him because he's brown? I mean, the teabagger rejection of Barack Obama is race-driven. I will never believe that it's anything but driven by race. Because he's governing, in many ways, he governs like Bush.
Right.
Except where it matters, you know, where you absolutely ram through things and damn the consequences.
he's definitely been definitely right of center. There's no question about that, especially when it comes to energy, especially comes with issues dear to your heart. But the thing you got to take into consideration is when people are hurting economically, when they're hurting in the pocketbook, like a lot of people are, me included, when you're hurting in the pocketbook, man, that's where you really get somebody. Like you said, when you want to cut off mountaintop removal, where do you go? Like the guys from the Rainbow Coalition or whatever, you go to their pocketbook. You go to their funding source. You go to where you get their money. You dry them up. That's what the guy in Alabama, too, who has gone after
the Klan, Morris D's.
And the,
yeah, Morris D's.
The right-wingers, the skinheads. You go after their funding. You know, you use the judicial system to go after their funding and cut their legs out from under them financially. And once you do, and that's what the Republicans have been doing to the Democrats too. Why do they go after tort reform? Why do they go after the lawyers? Because the lawyers are the super big funders of the Democrats. Why do they go after the unions? Why do they go after the teachers? Constantly go after government workers. Because you kill them, you kill the government, you kill the party. Because you kill their funding. And the Republicans know that. And they've been doing that. And we don't seem to get that. You know, we don't seem to understand.
Republicans also understand.
When the pocketbook gets hit, that's where you've really done somebody in. And I'm just saying, no, Obama, yeah, I definitely agree with you. There is some, the race issue is definitely out there. It's definitely there with the idiots, the teabag and morons. But boy, when you got an unemployment rate like we got and what's been happening economically to the middle and lower class people, it has an effect. And people act irrationally. When you don't have what you used to have, and you're very unclear about the future, and it being a better place than it was for your children, or for
yeah,
it will be.
Well, let's understand one thing about Republicans, Andy. They are not like us. When they've got somebody on the ropes, they keep punching. When they've got a disorganized army in complete rout, they will chase them down and stomp them to the last man. That's what you're talking about when you talk about going after the unions, going after the teachers, going after the trial lawyers. They understand that that a victory is not complete until you have completely destroyed your enemy, and they are the ones who see us as enemies, regardless of what Barack Obama might have said. They see us as enemies. They see us as unpatriotic. They see us as un-American. And the Republicans will complete their victory if it is at all possible. They're not going to slow down to loot through and root through stuff that we left in our flight. You know, we do that. We stop and we slow down. We say, well, you know, do you remember in 2008? How we talked about the Republican Party going to the wilderness? They don't go to the wilderness because they start on the next election cycle the day after the last one ends. We don't.
Right. They just regroup, get out the spreadsheets, go back to work.
And they get on the phones and they call the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And I mean, I don't know if we realize it or not, Andy, but we live in a perpetual election cycle now.
Right.
You know, we get a breather now for a year maybe, before the crap starts all over again.
Right.
And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get, because Citizens United money is real, and they are happy to spend it to complete their victory. Obamacare ads, do you think those, I don't think those are going to go away.
No.
They have unlimited money now.
You don't do advertising unless it works. There's a reason you do it.
And it works.
It works. People are stupid enough and naive enough to believe it. And they'll vote your way because of the stupidity. Yeah, the whole thing. And now they've got the feet on the ground, which the Koch brothers never had before. You got the teabaggers running around. You got these morons. Now, I think about the turn of the century. I think it was Frick, a guy named Frick was one of the industrialists. He made some comment along the lines that I've got like a million workers working for me. If they try to unionize, I'll pay off a million more to kill them off, the union workers. And that's basically what we're down to now. God, we're so outmanned, and they have so much resources and so much money. They'll just buy more to kill us off. And like you said, they don't care. They just want us completely flattened and wiped out. All right, Bob. Well, thanks a lot.
Oh, my pleasure, Andy. Thank you for your analysis, and thank you especially for the numbers. If nothing else, maybe the death of the Blue Dogs is an indication to the party about where it needs to be. But I doubt we've got that kind of ability to face the music. We're like drunks who won't go to the meetings.
Right, 28 seats compared to 4 or 5 true progressives went down.
Yeah.
They ought to think. It ought to make them think, you would hope.
You would hope. Take care, Andy.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Redwood City, California, that's our buddy Andy. And we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
Yeah, completely flattened. That certainly is their goal. I noticed Acorn declared bankruptcy yesterday as well, which was sad to see. They've been doing so much to get people registered to vote and do things like weatherize the homes of impoverished people and other things that really annoyed the ruling elite. And so to see their destruction was really hard to watch, and now their bankruptcy. But I guess now they're going after what they call Acorn's offspring. So I'm not sure of the details, but apparently some other organizations like Acorn have sprung up. People have learned a lot from Acorn's former existence, and they just have redeveloped it someplace else. And I think that's important to keep in mind when it feels so hopeless at times, is that it's constantly, progressive motion's constantly being regenerated someplace. And remember how disappointed we were when Al Gore lost, and there was so much conflict between liberals and Greens and all that stuff going on?
Yeah.
Still, what came out of that is Al Gore being free to put his heart and his mind into some incredibly important projects. And some could argue that he accomplished more outside of the office than he would have if he had won the presidency. Going to make that film, An Inconvenient Truth, winning the Oscar around it, so many people seeing that, it freaked out the fossil fuel industry.
Do you know that they still go into Gore derangement syndrome from time to time? I get all kinds of right-wing interview pitches, and I saw one the other day. Breaking news: Al Gore left his car running while he gave a speech. I'm not kidding. Really?
Yeah, it is. It is.
But that's also a sign of their understanding of the necessity for persistent messaging on given topics.
That's right. That's right. They're very concerned about the messaging we do, the conversations we have.
I would give anything, and this is not me just trying to toot my own trumpet or anything, Preston, but I would give anything to sit down with some Democratic or liberal or whatever we want to call ourselves, power brokers, and explain to them the necessity of messaging.
Yeah.
Because we still don't get it. Somebody made a suggestion on the program the other night that maybe the next thing that George Soros does, maybe he needs to fund a real live, honest to God, liberal basic cable channel.
Yeah.
And do it the way Rupert did, and damn the cost. Who cares how much it costs? We're going to put it out there, and we're going to let it hemorrhage money, but we're going to get the message out there, because that is what Rupert Murdoch did.
Yeah, yeah. There's some of that going on. I think some power brokers in the Democratic part of the establishment know the efficacy of doing something like that, and they fear it themselves. They don't want too much of a populist movement either. know, the blue dog type Democrats, and you know, the ones that really have not with the moneyed interests, they have a lot in common with the right wing. I think that's where Nader was right. There is a bit of Tweedledee and Tweedledum at that level. Yet there are people within the Democratic establishment, too, that are open to that message, and they're working on it. You know, I think Media Matters for America is a hugely important and effective contribution to that. Hillary Clinton actually approached David Brock, you know, when he was having his transformation about, you know, what he was doing for the right wing before, and was disgusted with himself. And then Brock went on to, at Hillary's urging, to develop Media Matters. So there is that working on messaging going on. Other examples, so much on the grassroots. It's really amazing. I can't keep up with the developments. I just discovered a weekly radio program called Between the Lines that looks very interesting. And just about 10 minutes ago, I got this link through Facebook of what Free Speech TV was doing regarding the elections last night. Talking to, I think Amy Goodman was on, and Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine was being interviewed by David Sirota, who's doing a progressive talk show here in Denver, and just on and on. We talk so much about the Beck machine and O'Reilly, and they're so huge. I think if we look at ourselves, though, every now and again, we'll remember that we're making some noise, too.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of little things where they're doing a few great big ones.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still say, Preston, that and this isn't just me complaining, okay? I still say that the people who have the money in their pockets have got to be made to understand that it is for them to put up or shut up. Quit telling me what a good liberal you are if you're not going to fund the liberal message.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, if we had the money, we would do it ourselves. And, in fact, here at the Horn, we do it ourselves. You know, we have a handful of people who give very, very generously, whether it be $5 or $1,000. It's a handful of people. We're still struggling to get the full complement of the thrifty 250, you know, 250 people doing $10 a month. But it's you know, right now it's more like the thrifty 75, maybe 90.
Okay.
But the thing is, we are doing, and I'm, this, like I said, this is not me complaining, Preston. This is me praising. You know, if people who are out of work or working minimum wage jobs can, if they're willing, and they are, I mean, I see the notes. If they're willing to do $10 a month to keep one little program going,
yep,
then why can't a guy who has more dollars than cents and has enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of wet elephants cough up a few million here and there to make this happen and not be concerned that the money only go to his cronies? Because, you know, cronyism isn't something that just happens on the right wing, Preston.
Yeah.
It happens among us, too, and we've got a real, and there's, this is the dirty word, so little Timmy and little Cindy need to leave, but we've got a real problem with, and this is actually a syndrome, so, and that's why it is what it is. I've heard it elsewhere. I'm not just using the word to be using it. We've got a starfucker problem. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase before, but we've got one of those, and it's that thing where people with, well, I'm a good liberal, and they'll give out a bunch of money, but they'll only give out that money if the person they're giving it to can stand them next to Barack Obama and get their picture made.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. I see. There's a lot of problems. You know, there's people with money who I think could be investing it a lot more wisely, and, you know, people with, you know, just like a middle income or something, some disposable income that just does not go very often towards political stuff. There's such a need for the investment. In so many good magazines, you know, a lot of them need support. And, well, I don't know. Hopefully it will come around sooner or later. But
well, you know, I genuinely appreciate how many people that you know, you're out there Facebooking and stuff and telling them about the Horn. I really do appreciate it, and you know, these volunteer efforts like yours and like Horst, who has taken to cutting out clips of the program every day and putting them on YouTube so people can put them on their Facebook pages.
Yeah, That's great stuff.
It's magnificent, and it's inspiring in the extreme. And, you know, I would I would just like the opportunity to look at some of these big, you know, these big movers and shakers and say, look what people are willing to do. A woman got her head stomped in Kentucky.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There needs to be a Citizens United movement in the real sense.
Yeah, really, Citizens Really United.
I mean, isn't that ironic that they got that tag for what they did? I mean, it was truly, it was Corporations United. And so they got to run under the cover of, they rebranded themselves Citizens United. Amazing. But, yeah, it's, oh, I have to say, some blue dogs did survive. I don't know if you noticed that Michael Bennett won the Senate seat here in Colorado.
Yes.
Over Ken Buck, and he certainly isn't the most progressive guy at all. In fact, there was a primary, run against him by Andrew Romanoff, and, you know, he lost. But Bennett, I think, there are some good things about him, and, you know, again, it takes, you know, so often we're hoping, you know, they need to do this, and they gotta speak up, and they gotta, you know, it's, they'll do it when we do it, you know, where we're at, in our homes, in our workplaces, again, with our money, you know, when we're more engaged and out there, I think our politicians will reflect that to a degree. And also, you know, I hope people don't invest everything in the elections. I mean, it was hard to see this. You know, in Colorado, actually, they're saying it was bucking the trend because we did elect a Democrat to the governorship, John Hickenlooper. He beat Tom Tancredo.
Thank God.
Yeah, yeah. Ed Perlmutter defeated that person I spoke of a couple weeks ago, Ryan Frazier, who was so anti-government, but he's been completely dependent upon the government his entire life, pretty much, and then the military-industrial complex, and then a more recent job is involving outsourcing jobs. So, yeah, he lost, which is also good to see. What else? We had a couple of other things going on, but we did lose a couple Democrats, John Salazar, Ken Salazar's brother.
Yeah.
And Betsy Markey, who was doing good things in Fort Collins, that area. She lost. But anyway, Colorado's kind of purple these days.
It's sort of a bruisey purple, isn't it, Preston?
It is. But aside from the political realm, there's, again, I'm seeing so many interesting things going on. Sometimes involving Republicans, you know, right-wing people. I know a lot of them. I work with them. I have family members who vote Republican. And I think they're hanging on to, you know, more traditional sense of Republican, you know, some notion of, I don't know, Eisenhower, or, I don't know.
Yeah, because Lincoln won the war, that kind of Republican.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. And some of them are kind of disgusted themselves with the Tea Party stuff. And, you know, I guess the Republican brand's even less popular than Congress's and the president's. You know, that's something that Hannity and all of them will never mention, that the Republican brand is not a popular one these days. So.
Well, because that's why they had to create the teabaggers.
Okay. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? The Republican brand was dead. And that's why the teabaggers were invented. And the teabag, you know, because it's got to be drilled home. And again, we're back to messaging. It has got to be driven home, Preston. The teabag phenomenon is not real. I mean, it's real in the sense that, yeah, they motivated a bunch of ignorant people to vote against their own interests, but it is not and never was a grassroots movement. Grassroots movements, as my colleague Rick Smith pointed out so accurately, don't have $200,000 party buses.
Right. That's a great point. And also keep in mind how few people actually vote. I mean, who gets polled are the likely voters. And I think of the people who could vote in this country, about half of them are actually registered to vote. And of those who are registered, I think only about half of those are less. Actually go out and do the process. for a variety of reasons. The U.S. is one of the most cumbersome, you know, processes among Western democracies.
And it is designed to be that way.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, you mentioned ACORN a few minutes ago, Preston. I just got a note in from Sandra saying that since the demise of ACORN, Get Out the Vote campaigns have declined by 30%. That's a bunch.
You know, that's one thing about the rally to restore sanity that I appreciated. I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about that whole thing, and I've read, you know, Chris Hedges and other people who have some sharp criticisms of it all. But still, I think there was a lot about what went on that day that was really kind of wonderful. I think it was a very creative piece of political theater, and just the shots of the people. I remember when Jeff Tweedy of Wilco and Mavis Staples, they did the song called You Are Not Alone. And the way the camera people for C-SPAN or Comedy Central, whoever filmed that, you know, between the musicians and the shots of the crowd, I was in tears, basically. And then to have the Roots doing the backup music, you know, doing their own show, I think was fantastic.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the, with it being done or how it was done or why it was done. I just think Jon Stewart manifested a degree of naivete that I didn't think he possessed.
Yeah, you know, and there's also the whole, like, putting Ed Schultz in that montage of kind of like, oh, the crazy cable people, and they were causing so many problems. And, you know, that certainly bothered me because I so appreciate Ed Schultz and what he's up to. And I think Jon Stewart and the people around him, they cannot see that. They know that Olbermann and Schultz are doing something different. And I think most people's reaction, liberal people, will be like, huh? You know, like, why are they in that? There's a part of me that feels like they did that, though, to, I think there's some nonpartisan requirement in them being on the mall. And I think they're also putting that in there to kind of, for the right-wingers who are catching their show. I think there's also a chance that Ed and Keith being on that, the Comedy Central channel, I don't know, I think it might draw the attention of people who might come across him at some other point. I don't, like, people, if they've only been watching Beck or O'Reilly, maybe they'll say, oh, yeah, I saw that guy on Comedy Central. I don't know. I think in the long run it might be helpful, actually, to Ed.
Well, you know, you mentioned Schultz, and I give credit where credit is due. He did something this evening that I think was very good. This is the quote. 4 years ago, in the midst of an avalanche of criticism of the Bush administration, Nancy Pelosi took impeachment off the table. I want to ask Mr. Boehner tonight, are you going to take impeachment off the table, or are we going to go down this road of divide? Are we going to go down this road of investigations?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. Definitely. He had me laughing yesterday. He was talking about how Tom DeLay is on trial again for all the money he was funneling to Republicans illegally, and he was like, oh, you know, you should have waited a few years for Citizens United ruling. You know,
yeah, that would have saved him.
Exactly. And he goes, yeah, DeLay the hammer is a man ahead of his time. And, but yeah, he's doing great work. And I noticed also, I made an effort to catch at least part of The Daily Show and the Colbert Report, after their big rally. And they were doing great stuff. I think Stewart's, one of his reporters, interviewed, you know, in quotes, this guy who's been attacking a gay activist at the University of Michigan, and building a whole website around him, kind of surveilling him, calling him a gay Nazi, all this stuff. Well, it turns out this guy doing this is the assistant attorney general
of Michigan. Yes, yeah. I know the story.
Okay. So, you know, Stewart was revealing that, and then Colbert was doing something similar on his show. So, again, we have a lot of allies out there, as big as Fox is. You know, they've got the Wizard of Oz kind of projection machine going on, but we're kind of like the little Tuchins, I guess, and the Giants getting some ropes tied around him, I think.
I hope, Preston. It's awfully good to hear from you, my friend.
Likewise, Bob. I'll be in touch soon.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
A few minutes left in the program, and let's see what's happening, if anything. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Bob. I just kind of, you know, you look at the totals. From what I've heard, I think the Democrats now will have 185 in the House.
I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but I will certainly take your word for it.
I think I saw that in one of the press things. And that would be the least that they've had in the House since 1931. And you've got this situation. I am almost willing to ask that both Obama and Biden both simply sit down and resign in the next week.
And just say, screw it.
Yeah, and then we could get Nancy Pelosi out of her Gulf Streams. Hopefully it's not something that they would do after January 3rd. But, you know, if they would do it between now and January 3rd, maybe we could get somebody in there that will actually go out and promote the Democratic agenda. You know, something that the Republicans seem to do with theirs.
That would be, well, but you recognize that there's no way they'd do that.
Well, Nancy.
No matter how poorly they wield it, no one voluntarily gives up power unless they are legally mandated to do so.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Schultz's idea of taking impeachment off the table is wrong. I think Nancy Pelosi was wrong to do it.
Oh, I think she was too.
The thing is, what the hell are you going to impeach Obama for? Wanting to be bipartisan and essentially handing,
but again, let's
Republicans.
I know, but you've got to remember we're dealing with Republicans here. They don't need a reason. A bully doesn't need a reason to steal your lunch money and punch you in the face.
Well, that's true.
There were no crimes involved in a consensual sex act between two consenting adults in the 1990s with Bill Clinton. There were no crimes. They did it anyway.
They created the crime by forcing Clinton to testify under oath. And then he comes up with it. It depends on what the meaning of is. And anyone who actually listened to Monica Lewinsky would know that they did not have sex because it was one of her complaints that they did not have sex.
Precisely.
You know, it was like, no, Clinton was using her. The feminist group should have been outraged about it. They weren't. And it was utter nonsense. It's almost as if Clinton was elected to clean up the mess that Bush 1 had left, and Obama has been elected to clean up the mess that Bush 2 has left, and that it's simply a setup to return power back to the Republicans 8 years later.
It all does sort of, it's all rather theatrical, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, rather than get in and do something and try to restore things. I mean, I got the bad feeling that Obama would sign off on scuttling Social Security. The same way Clinton signed off on the trade deal.
Or signed off on so-called welfare reform.
I mean, if you go back, what is it, 24 years ago, Reagan pushed through a tax reform package, and part of that tax reform package eliminated out capital gains taxes.
Yes.
Having a special tax rate, because the argument at that time done, and I think Gephardt was leader of the House at the time, was that why should people who have $400 in interest be taxed at a higher rate than somebody that's got $1 million in capital gains? and that interest and capital gains are essentially the same thing, and they should be taxed at the same rate, and that should be taxed at the same rate that wages are taxed. And, you know, if you want to have capital gains, fine and dandy. Limit it to the first 100 grand for a family. Or limit it to the first 50 grand for a family, or whatever. You know, put in a number and you put in a limit and you get that capital gains rate for the first group, and after that you're taxed at the normal tax rates. Happens to be a benefit for people in the middle class to invest in the stock market, and it happens to give that same benefit to the billionaires, but then after the billionaires exceed that limit, tough, you're taxed at the regular tax rate that you've got.
Well, it's similar to the Social Security ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, they like to talk about how Social Security's in trouble, but for God's sakes, the people who make $250,000 a year, the people who make $1 million a year, aren't paying Social Security tax on anything except, what, the first 90 grand?
Might be 107, but that doesn't matter. This was set probably 25 years ago, too. And they did two things at the time. One was that they decided, we're going to tax Social Security for these wealthy people. And so they said that at the time, I think it was 32 grand a year if husband and wife made 32 grand a year, half of their Social Security would be taxed. Well, 32 grand a year in the mid-80s wasn't a whole lot of money. Or, you know, it was a fair amount of money to get. But inflation's eaten into that. Their 32 grand a year is now worth probably about 20 grand a year back then. And it stayed at the same level because they haven't adjusted it to inflation, and they haven't adjusted the $107,000 to inflation. And if you did both of those, that 32 grand a year would probably be 50 grand a year, or maybe 60 grand a year, and that 107,000 would be up at someplace 150, 160 grand a year. And you'd be pulling in that additional amounts from Social Security.
It doesn't seem like rocket science, does it?
No. And you had the Reagan people pushing that idea back in the early 80s when they took over from Carter, who actually in his first election didn't lose control of the House or Senate, and you had him pushing this idea that inflation was pushing, this bracket creep was occurring, and so middle-class people were getting pushed in higher brackets because of inflation, and they wanted to go out there and adjust it. And you adjusted those numbers to inflation. But here you've got them not adjusted to inflation, and in both cases, the way that it's working happens to be to the benefit of the rich and the detriment of the poor.
Which is precisely how the Republican Party likes things.
Uh-huh, that's exactly how they designed it.
Well, I really appreciate the call. I've enjoyed the conversation, and unfortunately, the show's over, and I got to get out of here.
Well, take care then.
All right, you have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And thus we come to the end of the program. Thanks, everybody. I hope we've done some, I think we've done some serious thinking this evening and conversating, and I appreciate that. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, all of you who, with your kind contributions, keep this on the air and keep it going. It wouldn't happen without you. And you are by far more dedicated to trying to save this country, frankly, than the millionaires and billionaires who don't. You are the backbone of the liberal progressive movement in this country. And for that I am grateful. We all are. Thanks to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. It was good to hear from Susan this evening. She's been through a very, very tough time, and I hope we'll all be there for her. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Matt Osborne. Go have a look at his post, osborneinc.com. Thanks to our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com, Reverbo. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Thanks to him. Thanks to John Fox. I enjoyed having him on the show last night, and God knows we would be in a deep hole with no light if it weren't for the the skills and abilities that John Fox brings to bear to keep us going at the horn. Thanks also to Ben Birch, who also keeps us going with all he does.